Okie doke. Welcome, everyone. It is 10:01 on August 24th, 2023, and the Arizona Board for Private Postsecondary Education is hereby called to order. Pursuant to ARS 38-431.02, notice is hereby given to the general public and to members of the Arizona State Board for Private Postsecondary Education that the board will hold a board meeting open to the public on the date and time indicated above, which is today. The meeting will be held digitally online. A full meeting agenda and list of applications to be considered can be found online at ppse.az.gov. The board reserves the right to change the order of items on the agenda, except for those matters set for a specific time. The formal hearings and formal interviews are scheduled to be heard during specific time blocks. The board chair, however, reserves the right to call cases in random order. That'd be fun. The board, upon a majority vote of a quorum of the members, may hold an executive session on any of the listed agenda items to obtain legal advice pursuant to ARS 38-431.03A3. Americans with Disabilities Act. Persons with a disability may request a reasonable accommodation, such as a sign language interpreter or a copy of this document in an alternative format by contacting the executive director himself, Mr. Kevin LaMountain, at 602-542-5716. And with that, let's call the roll.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Leck.
Present.
Dr. Leck is present. Mr. Wallace?
Present.
Mr. Wallace is present. Mr. Ball?
Present.
Mr. Ball is present. Our first new board member of the day is Ms. Kelly.
Present.
Ooh, welcome.
Thank you.
And Dr. Boutte?
Present.
Okay.
All board staff is, I'm Kevin LaMountain, Executive Director. I'm here. Keith Blanchard?
I'm here.
Keith is here. Ms. Noelle Vetter?
Present.
Noelle. Ms. Jacqueline Rome? Jacqueline may or may not be with us today. And then Assistant Attorney General Roberto Pulver?
Present.
Good morning, Roberto. All are here and accounted for.
Okay, thank you. Are there any conflicts of interest? Hearing none. We're going to move on. And if for some reason we hit an agenda item and someone feels that they have a conflict of interest, please declare it. Next up is the review, discussion, and possible action on approval of board meeting minutes. And why don't we have our two newest board members move and second the minutes?
So moved.
I second.
Second.
Don't do it all at once then. Okay, so we have Dr. Boutte and Ms. Kelly. Mr. LaMountain, you want to call the vote?
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Romano is absent today. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball? Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte?
Aye.
And I should clarify for the recording that we just voted to accept the audio recordings of the official open minutes of the board meeting from May 25th, 2023. Next up, which is we've all been waiting for, is the executive director's report. Mr. LaMountain.
Sure. Dr. Mittman, before we get started, would you like to maybe have both of our two new board members introduce themselves to
Yeah, please do. So, Ms. Kelly, can we start with you?
Sure. So, I'm Mary Kelly. I'm the CEO of Stratatech Education Group. We're the parent company for Tulsa Welding School and the Refrigeration School, Inc. Been in the proprietary, the post-secondary sector for, I don't want to date myself, but over 20 years. So very happy to be here and be part of this.
Great. So like you were an intern in high school.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Well, thanks and welcome. It's
Did we
I don't know. Somebody will have to have have to get together. We'll all have to get together for lunch, but we will not talk about official business. Don't worry, Mr. Melton. And did you, I don't remember, do we have an assistant AG with us today?
We do. We also have Dr. Boutte, so he's another new board member.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Dr. Boutte, take it away.
Good morning. Thank you so much. Dr. Brad Boutte, I'm the executive director at Southwest Institute of Healing Arts. I've been in the higher ed here in Arizona for 24 years, and I'm so grateful to be here with you all.
Well, great. Well, your school already has left its mark on the board for many years. The founder of SWEHA was on the board. I can't remember. She may have been the board chair. It was before my time.
I believe she was for a time, yes.
Well, good. Well, great. Well, welcome. It's really nice to have all of you. And you heard the rest of us, you know, introduce ourselves. I'm Paul Mittman, and I'm president of Sonoran University of Health Sciences. Dr. Jennifer Leck is here. Do you want to just say a couple of things about yourself?
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. My name is Dr. Jennifer Leck. I am the vice provost at Grand Canyon University. I have been with GCU for 19 years, and I've been on the board for, I don't know how many years, but it's been a long time.
And Dr. Leck also is the chair of AZ-SARA. So those of the schools who are here for, you know, who have distance learning in other states, pay attention to her, what she has to say. Mr. Ball?
My name is Doug Ball. I'm co-owner of the CPA firm Ball in McGraw, PC. We specialize in the audit of proprietary schools. And I've been in a CPA here in Arizona for about 25 years.
Okay. Well, while we're on a CPA theme here, Mr. Wallace?
Yeah, my name is Scott Wallace. Grew up in the Valley here. I am a CPA just concentrating on forensic issues, a variety of consulting matters and so forth. I founded the firm Wallace Flesh and Dreher 25 years ago, and I've been a CPA in the state of Arizona for a long time, probably 45 years.
Well, great. I think that's it.
Great.
Are we done for the day? Can we take a break for lunch?
We did not take a break. We've got a lot going on today.
No, we have a long agenda, and I have a tea time at 1, so we're going to have to hurry. Just kidding. Okay. And do we have our assistant? Did you introduce our assistant AG before when you did the roll call?
We did before, but Roberto, if you would like to say hello and introduce yourself.
Sure. Let me wave first so you know who it is. My name is Roberto Pulver. And I've been your assistant AG for a couple of months. It's been a pleasure working with Kevin, very much so, and also with Keith. And I'm here to do whatever I can to make your experience as board members pleasurable to the best I can.
Good. Well, that's bad. Our former assistant AG never said that, so thanks.
My pleasure.
Good. Okay. Next up on the agenda is the review and discussion of the executive director's report. Now, take it away.
Great, thank you. Dr. Mittman, members of the board, in your folder, you have the information that I put in for our executive director report. We have gone through our year end now and have completed FY23, and now we are into FY24. In terms of the financials for FY23, in our operations account, which is Fund 2056, we ended the year below our appropriation of $33,810 below, which is great. That's meaning that we spent less than what we were allocated by the legislature, but not by much. So we were about where I thought we would end the fiscal year of 23. We do have a fund balance that we'll talk about here in a second. The fund balance is $388,450, meaning that we still have money in the bank of nearly $400,000. In our student tuition recovery fund, which is another issue that will be on the agenda here in a few moments, We ended that particular fund with a balance of $415,441, which is just below the required $500,000 minimum for the billing cycle and invoicing cycle for next year. So we will be I'll be asking you here in a few minutes to vote to instruct the staff to invoice institutions for the FY goal for last year, but in FY24. With that additional balance that we have in our operations account, in part that was due to the increase fees that we got through the legislature 2 years ago now, for a year ago, 2 years. What I'm asking is our accounting group to help me with the process of moving $100,000 from our operating account into the student tuition recovery fund, which will bolster that account for next year, along with the nearly $388,000 that we'll be collecting from the institutions this year, which should put us in very good shape, assuming no school closures, should put us in good shape for FY25 and FY, potentially into FY26, where we would not need to go back in and invoice institutions for the student tuition recovery fund. I will let you know how that works out by the time we get to our October board meeting. But we are working on that. I've listed a list of school closures from July 1 through June 30 of last year. There were 18. They weren't all school closures. Some of them were location changes and or locations that no longer operate in that particular facility. It wasn't specifically a closure of the school. It was more of a closure of the license for a location. The dashboard shows we're at 228 schools as of today. That will go up. Assuming that you approve the institutions that were on the agenda for later this morning, early this afternoon. Additional information that is in there, I don't know if you have any questions at this time.
Any questions from the board? I have a question, Kevin, Ms. Romain. Do in the report, I think maybe it was in the Sunset Review response, you had talked about Iron Mountain and needing to digitize, I don't know how many million records are there, which we pay for on an ongoing basis and is also, you know, problematic from a timing standpoint. You know, in terms of being able to access them. I don't know if it's problematic, but it does take longer than it would if they were digital. And do you, you know, for some of the surplus that the board, you know, has accrued, is that an option? Would the board be able to use some of that for a project like that? And I don't know how much a project like that would cost, but I know that it's, you know, it's like, you know, it's a lot of paper.
Dr. Bevan, members of the board, we are unable to utilize the money that is in the operations account because that's an appropriated account that is approved through the legislature. Moving money over into the student tuition recovery fund, however, that is a non-appropriated budget, and there would be the potential ability to use some of that money. However, what I have done and for the FY25 budget, which I did for the FY24 and FY23 budget, is put in a request to the legislature for a one-time general appropriation for digitizing the documents. And I put in a request last year, and I will and this year, of roughly $500,000. That should, in that 4 million plus documents that we have in Iron Mountain, would digitize the majority of those documents. But that would have to be approved through the legislature. So that is in the budget for FY25 as a request.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so unless there's any other questions, carry on.
So next up would be the review, discussion, and action, possible action on these non-licensing items. And the first one is I've submitted to the board members our sunset review document that is to be sent to Senator Bennett and the Legislative Education Committees by on or before September 1st. So I know you've all had a chance to look at it and review it. If there are any changes, if not, what we would need in this particular case is for you to vote and approve and direct staff to move that report forward.
Okay. Are there any changes? Mr. LaMatt and I spoke couple of days ago about, you know, a suggestion or two. Any other changes? You know, I'll just compliment you and the staff for, you know, I think a really excellent piece of work. You know, one of the things that I do want to call out, I think there were 32 schools who submitted letters of support for the board. And I think, you know, for those who are on the call today who have been working with staff, I think the letters of support, you know, echo the kinds of comments that we hear at board meetings about how helpful staff is in, you know, in helping schools navigate the process, whether for the first time or for renewals. So unless someone has a specific edit or recommendation, can I get a motion for the board to approve the sunset review submission?
This is Dr. Leck, I motion.
And a second?
This is Dr. Boutte, I second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second, and let's vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly.
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte.
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. By your vote of 6 ayes, no nays, that motion passes. Thank you. Next up on the list is the FY25 budget submission. As I sent to you, to the board members this week, there is a new software system that is in place in the state of Arizona that has had a few glitches, and we did not have gain access to that system until the first week of August. So there's just been some challenges entering and getting access to my house. So what I have provided to you in the FY25 budget folder is our budget submission for FY24. We are proposing that we submit the exact budget that we did in FY24 for FY25. So all of the items would be exactly the same, including the addition of staff, the addition of a number of other issues that we submitted to approve last year.
Excuse me, Mr. Mountain, hold on one sec. Hey, Mr. Wallace, could you hit mute on your computer? Because I think that's where the feedback is coming from.
Great. Thank you. So the document that is in there is your FY24. That'll be the exact same budget as if we submit for FY25. And as a reminder, we submitted the budget last year by September 1st, which is when it's due. It went through the legislative process at the beginning of the year. The budget was signed into law by the governor a few months ago, and in that was basically stripped most of what we put in there as additional expenditures that would be in the FY24 budget that we're currently in. So all of the items that we discussed last year were removed, and they actually cut our budget by about $20,000 from last year. So we have a confident, higher level of confidence this year that based on the legislature and the administration, that there will be additional support for the items that we have in the FY25 budget. And I'd be happy to answer any questions on the budget.
Okay. Any questions, board members? Hearing none, can I get a motion to approve the fiscal year 25 budget submission?
This is Scott Wallace. I make the motion to approve the fiscal 25 budget.
This is Doug. I'll second it.
Thank you. Great. That's good. I'm seeing the accountants, so that's a good sign.
That's good. We have a motion and a second. Roll call would be Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Butte?
Aye.
Dr. Butte votes aye. By your vote of six ayes, no nays, that motion passes. Next up on the list is direction from the board to open a rules package for FY24, FY25. This would be a rules review. We conducted our five-year rules review last year and have addressed some challenges with current rules. Again, if you recall, over the last 2 years, we have had two new bills pass impacting our budgets, and it changed some terms. So as currently where we stand today, our rules and our statutes do not align. So the statutes are where we are, where the legislative process happened the last couple of years with the passage of the two bills. So they do not align. There are also some additional updates that need to be moving forward in the rules to change certain terms that are used. And there's some very outdated rules, as that the last rule review and package was opened and completed in 2016. So quite a bit has happened in the space over the last number of years. So what we're requesting is the opportunity to submit to the governor's office to initiate rulemaking.
Great. Mr. Mountain, I have a question. Can you remind me what type of rules? Is this like the modernization of the fact that the difference between regional has gone away, that kind of stuff, or?
Yes, so thank you, Dr. Mittman and Dr. Leck. There are a number of that is one of them, is in statute we have removed the difference between, the designator with regional versus a national accreditation, but they are not in rules. So there's a misalignment there. There's also a number of issues where there's rules talking about correspondence schools, which we don't have. The world has changed quite a bit. So and just so that the board is aware, that when we open up the rules, the rulemaking process, there are a number of stakeholder activities that happen. There will be a number of meetings. They will all be public meetings. Schools will be able to participate. The general public will be able to participate in the process. And the process is going to take about 2 years to complete, from the beginning that we would get the approval to initiate rulemaking until it goes before the legislature. It's going to be somewhere in that 16 to 24 month window.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? If not, Dr. Mittman?
Can we get a motion to approve the board's to initiate the rulemaking process in the upcoming legislative session? I'll make the motion. It's kind of an awkward motion. So I'll make that motion. I can't second it though, so somebody has to second it.
This is Cal Wallace. I'll second it.
Yeah, thank you. All right. Let's go.
All right, Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte?
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. By your vote of six ayes, no nays, that motion passes. The last on this item is the Student Tuition Recovery Fund. We need, again, as I mentioned in the executive director report, we are below the $500,000 required by statute. So we will need to bill invoice again. In your board folder under Strife, you will see I added the updated spreadsheet this morning, which shows the institutions that will be invoicing. That invoice will come up to about $385,000 that will be brought in to the Student Tuition Recovery Fund. And again, with a potential allocation of another $100,000 that we may be able to bring over from our operating 2056 account. So we would need a motion from the board to approve invoicing institutions for the Student Tuition Recovery Fund.
Great.
I motion we approve. We move forward with invoicing institutions for the Tuition Recovery Fund.
Great.
Second, Dr. Boutte.
We have a motion. We have a second. Any questions?
I'll just say that for schools who are on the call, historically the Strife Fund excluded schools that were regionally accredited, and Mr. LaMountain referenced earlier that that designation, regional versus national, disappeared under the previous federal administration. And so I just want to call out that a consortium of schools worked with Mr. LaMountain and staff to come up with an equitable way to bill all the institutions for the Strife Fund. And so I just want to acknowledge that and say thank you for that work that they did, including some of the people are on this board. So with that, unless there's any other questions, I think it's time to vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Mr. Romano. Oh, excuse me. He's on today. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly.
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte.
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. By the vote of six ayes, no nays, that motion passes. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Thanks for all that work. That was a lot.
Sure.
That was a long report. All right. Next up, we have, what do we have? We have review and discussion regarding quarterly report to the board. And first up is Aspen University. Dr. St. Arnold, nice to see you again.
Nice to see you too. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for inviting Aspen to come before you today. Joining me is Aspen's Vice President of Finance, Mr. Michael LaMontagne. He can provide answers to questions the board may have about Aspen's finances. We've been busy serving our students in all of our programs while continuing to meet the requirements before us from the various regulatory bodies. First, we're working closely with our consultant and ombudsperson to implement the requirements of the BRN amendment to the consent agreement. Our current second quarter first time pass rate landed at 78%, a 53% increase over Q1's rate. As of July 31st, we still have a little over 200 students in the program. Phoenix will be done in January of 2024, Nashville in May of 24, Florida and Texas in September of 24. Four students have tested in Texas to date, all passed on the first attempt. Three tested in Florida to date, two passed on the first attempt, and one passed on the second attempt. Though our students struggled meeting the Arizona benchmark of 80%, our students do pass the NCLEX. As of July 31st in 2023, the Arizona State Board of Nursing has licensed 533 Aspen graduates. The Oregon Board licensed 3, California 4, Montana 2, Oklahoma 1, North Carolina 1, Illinois 1, Alaska 1, Florida 3, and Texas 6. We're currently writing our required response to the DEAC's show cause chairs report from the site visit we had on June 13th. We have a full reaccreditation site visit scheduled for October 19th when board staff again will be in attendance, and we're busy writing our self-evaluation to be submitted September 15th. We received our second reimbursement from the Department of Education under HCM2, and we've submitted for our third. And we're still in the financial aid program review process with the U.S. Department of Education. We have responded to one student inquiry. We have timely submitted all the reporting that's been required of us by our various regulators. And with that, Michael can provide some additional context relating to the financial information that's been provided to you in connection with our monthly report. Michael?
Thank you, Sherry. Good morning, everybody. Some housekeeping. Our fiscal year end 2023 ended July 31st. So the financials that we're going to be going over today will be the first 2 months of this fiscal year. You will be receiving the end of the first quarter financial statements later this week as we submit them to you. So first, I just wanted to cover. I'm going to cover the our parent company, Aspen Group's financial statements, and then I'll go over Aspen University's financial results, and then cover cash, and then wrap it up. So the unaudited financials for Aspen Group, the parent company, ended fiscal year 2023 with an EBITDA of a loss of $1.8 million. Keep in mind that was versus a loss of $5.1 million the previous year. As a result of our restructuring that we had in AGI in the second quarter of our fiscal year, the fourth quarter EBITDA resulted in a positive $851,000 at our parent company AGI, as opposed to the $834,000 loss the prior year. The one thing to note, as of June 30th, this fiscal year, the first 2 months for AGI, the EBITDA for AGI was a positive $1.1 million. So with the restructuring and the work that we've been doing, our parent company is consistently producing operating income moving forward. Moving on to Aspen University, the first 2 months of this fiscal year, 2024, we generated $5.3 million in net revenue, and Aspen University contributed a positive net income of $758,000, which is a 14% operating margin. Our gross margin continues to remain high at 67% as a result of minimal advertising spend and a continued watch on our instructional costs. Despite the minimal advertising, it is good to announce that our enrollments, our new starts, remain significant for the first 4 months of this fiscal year. With 3 months already booked and August wrapping up, we're forecasting 763 new enrolled starts for the first 4 months for Aspen University. Aspen continues to be a relevant, affordable quality education. With a quality and affordable payment options, which is why we believe students continue to come to our institution. We do believe that this level of enrollments will continue to be maintained as we ramp up our advertising. We're going to continue to spend a minimal amount of advertising as we're continuing to see these enrollments happen. Moving on to cash, we received, as Sherry mentioned, our second submission of HCM2 on August 9th, totaling $2.9 million. We continue to pay our accounts payable timely, working with vendors throughout the process. As you can see in the balance sheet, accounts payable was $474,000, down from $714,000 in the previous quarter. And we just submitted this week our third HCM2 submission, which is approximately $1.9 million that we're expecting. As of August 11th, 2004, our consolidated parent company has unrestricted cash of $1.1 million. The last thing I would state here is that, you know, accounts receivable continues to be Aspen University's largest asset. Our current AR is at $10.6 million, our long-term AR at 4.7, and then we have a current asset of $4.2 million, which is primarily the outstanding HCM2 funds that are waiting to be received. So we continue to work our way through this process, and good results are happening. So that's it for my report. I'm open to any questions.
Thank you, Michael. Yes, we're ready to answer any questions the board may have.
And you should have had your admissions staff here to give the report. So congratulations to them. Questions from the board? So I'll ask a couple of questions. Any update on the federal VA's decision whether to allow AZ's Arizona State Approving Agency to administer VA benefits from Arizona?
Yes, we did receive that approval. That came a couple of weeks ago. I did send it to Mr. Lamont when we received it.
Okay, great. And I know that you held a town hall meeting on the 7th, which would have preceded the receipt of the decision from VA. How did that go?
You know, we talked to students. We work with them very carefully. We had some that chose to step out. We had some that chose to change their payment method. And you know, we've worked with them. So we've now noticed them that our approval has come through. And we're putting them all back in school. So as far as I know, there haven't been any additional complaints.
Okay. And could you elaborate on Aspen, I assume it was Aspen Group's notification of a late filing with the SEC?
Michael?
Yeah, so I'm not sure I understand the question that Dr. Bittman asked. Can you ask it again?
Yeah, I'll have to pull it up. I think that you had a Securities and Exchange filing due and asked for an extension or, you know, for whatever reason, you know.
We're waiting because our audit isn't completed. Our auditors are still working on our financials. So,
So is that like a normal course of, you know, every year, you know, that would ordinarily happen, you know?
No, we did a filing with the OTC. I did send those documents to Mr. Lamontin when that filing went through.
Okay.
So I can get additional answers on that.
No, I just wanted to know the reason behind it. And so when do you expect the audit to be completed?
Yeah, that's we would expect the audit to be complete in the next few weeks. But yeah, that's the reason that we extended that, was to have the audited financials finalized prior to submitting that to the OTC.
Okay. And so in your response to DEAC, it's kind of like a weird interregnum where you have the report from DEAC, but then you have a full accreditation renewal coming up. And so it looked like they reviewed all however many 12 or 11 criteria already. And so is that something that you're going to, is there a, you know.
Dr. Mittman, I think I'm understanding your question, but the show cause was actually different. There were a limited number of standards that they came to review in addition to the questions that existed in the show cause. So that was limited. And DEAC has three choices when you go through a show cause visit. And one of them is to kind of wrap it up in a full reaccreditation to vacate the show cause and reaccredit if they choose to do that. We're still in the middle of the process. So in September, on September 8th, we're responding to the standards and the chair's report for the show cause visit. And then on September 15th, we're submitting all of the 12 standards and all of our documentation on Aspen University's ability to be reaccredited. And that site visit will be on October 19th. Okay. Yeah, that's as much as I know to date.
Okay. All right. Thank you for answering our questions. Anyone else? Any other questions? Hearing none. Have a nice day.
Thank you.
Thanks, you guys.
Best wishes for September and October.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right. UEI College, come on down. Mesa, UEI Mesa.
No, it's actually not. I apologize for that. That's a typo. It's not Mesa.
Okay. UEI College, come on
down.
Good
morning.
All right. You want to introduce yourselves and make an opening statement?
Sure, I can start. Krista Jones. Good morning, Director Lamontin and members of the board. UEI received a letter from the Department of Education on July 31st regarding anonymous allegations, which was provided to the board. Our response is due September 5th, and the board will be provided with that response. With regard to our ongoing conversation with the department, members of our senior team met twice with the senior officials, the most recent being August 9th, which you'll note was after we received that letter. And we submitted a proposal to the department on August 14th that would resolve all issues. As we learn more, we will keep the board informed. And I think Sanjay can take it from here with regard to the financial where we
all
are.
Right. Thank you, Krista. Good morning, Director Lamontin, and good morning, members of the board. So financially, we continue to do well. UEI and IEC, we continue to do financially well. We remain EBITDA positive overall for IEC. For our campuses in Arizona, both Mesa and Phoenix, we're also EBITDA positive. Our balance sheet also is fairly strong. Our current ratio is sitting at about 1.62, so it's a good indication of our balance sheet. Our accounts payable is sitting around 1% of our assets, so fairly low. Cash continues to remain strong, and we're continuing to work with the department on our HCM2 for FCC, and that's going fairly well as well.
Okay.
Questions?
Yeah. Any questions from the board? All right. So, Ms. Jones, you may have referenced this already, but do you have a response from the Education Department from Federal Student Aid Division to the June 6th letter from UEI or IEC?
June 6th letter.
Are you referring to the response we had sent back on FCC?
Yeah.
We have not heard back yet.
Okay. And so I assume that was the update on FCC's request for reconsideration for participating in Title IV. Okay. Those are the only questions that I have. Any other board members have questions?
I do. I'm trying to understand the impetus for this challenge. You said was an anonymous complaint?
Anonymous allegations, similar to the letter FCC received in October 2022. There's a lot of different dates, so they're a little tricky to keep track of. Does that help?
I don't see anything that helps me understand the backstory of
right.
It. I'm not sure if I'm supposed to. So
So the FCC received a complaint, a letter from the Department of Anonymous Complaints, and the board received, you all received our response at some point. Director Lamontin,
I'll say unless okay. I mean, I think the bearing that it has on your presence in Arizona is really, you know, not from a complaint standpoint, because it's not a complaint from either of the schools here in Arizona. I think it's just kind of background and potentially financial implications. I know that FCC comprises about 23% of the parent company's total revenues, and so anything that, you know, further erodes the finances in Florida, you know, could have an impact on us. Us as a state, but you, operating colleges here in Arizona. So I would say unless we need to get into the details for another reason, I think that we can wait and have you guys back at, you'll probably be at a quarterly finance meeting. We can get an update at that time.
Okay, that's helpful.
Does that work for you?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right, any other questions? Hearing none, we have no motions or seconds to make, and so have a really nice day the rest of you guys.
All right, thank you so much. Appreciate your time.
You're welcome. All right, next up, review, discussion, and possible action on the request for modification of the 12/22/2022 stipulated agreement for Brookline College. And representing the college, we have a couple of people here, the dean and the dean of the, we have three people here. So who would like to make an opening statement?
So I'll start off. Hello, everyone. Don Corbin, a senior VP of compliance. With me today, I have Ms. Siobhan Scott, who's our regional dean of nursing. And we have Dr. Shalonda Wilson-Patterson, who is our campus dean of nursing. First of all, thank you all for the opportunity to be here today. I'll start off with a recap of where we were and where we are today. Our school entered into a consent agreement with the Arizona Board of Nursing in September of 2022 due to some concerns regarding the BSN program at our Phoenix campus. A primary reason for the consent agreement was that our program was not meeting the minimum average NCLEX pass rate of 80%. Section D of that consent agreement included a phase one requirement that the program cease enrollment and increase first-time quarterly pass rates to a minimum average of 80% within the first 12 months of the agreement. As a result of the improvements and initiatives we have implemented, we are happy to report that we have successfully achieved the requirements of phase one, or section D of the consent agreement. In Q2 of 2022, we achieved a 97.3 pass rate with 36 out of 37 testers passing on their first try. So far for Q3, we've had 4 out of 4 testers passing on their first try. So we're trending now for this quarter at 100%. So with these significantly improved pass rates, we are now at a 80.81 average pass rate for calendar year 2023. So as a result of this performance, the Board of Nursing executed a second amendment to their original consent agreement as of August 3rd, which removes Section D or Phase 1 and allows us to move forward with Section E or Phase 2 of the agreement. Phase two allows the BSN program to immediately resume student admissions into the program with the provision that we must maintain an average 80% pass rate moving forward. So regarding our stipulated agreement with this board, we believe we've been in full compliance with all of the terms included within the agreement, including term number 3, which requires us to comply with the Board of Nursing's consent agreement. So considering the inclusion of the Board of Nursing second amendment to their consent agreement, we respectfully ask the BPSC board to follow the Board of Nursing's action and allow us to resume enrollment in the BSN program. Allowing us to do so would help us to continue to fully comply with the Board of Nursing's continuing consent agreement terms. So with that, I'd love to open it up for questions of anyone on our team.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Corbin. We did receive, or Mr. LaMountain did share the July 24th email from Sharon Vitsa from the Board of Nursing. And so congratulations on getting your NCLEX scores to where you need to be. So that sounds great. I don't have any questions, other board members? Hearing none, I am going to make a motion to accept the modification and remove Section 3 of the 12-22-2022 Arizona Board of Private Postsecondary Education Stipulated Agreement. Can I get a second?
I second.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. And Mr. LaMountain, let's vote.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly.
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte.
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. That's six ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
Thank you all very, very much.
And Mr. Corbin, I will amend that document.
Okay.
I'll have our Attorney General look at it quickly, and then I will send it over to you sometime early next week.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much.
Welcome.
Okay. Next category, review, discussion, and possible action. Let's see. Finance Committee referral to the board. And this is from Inspection Go Academy. And so who's here from Inspection Go?
Allison Macy. I'm the Director of Finance, as well as Kathy Broad, who is my accountant, and Waylon Coulter, who is our Senior Manager of Academy. He can help me answer any technical questions, and I can talk over the finance piece.
Thank you, Doke. You're going to make an opening statement?
Yes. So as for our finances, in 2022, we had 465 total students. That's 161 less than budgeted. Out of those 465 students, only four were Arizona residents. We operate in multiple states, so we have a very small class of Arizona students. In 2022, our net income was better than 2021 by $800,000. This was due to the lower payroll and overhead expenses. Our 2023 projections look very promising. I plan on ending the year better than budget on both our students as well as our revenue. We are at our enrollment budget for first quarter of 2023, and we ended better than budget for second quarter of 2023, which I will present to you in our next meeting. We did not have any Arizona students in first quarter of 2023. There's, like, our academy recruitment team, which is Waylon, is working very hard to increase our enrollment to better our revenue.
Okay. Thanks. Anybody else from Inspection Go Academy? So which one of you is going to tell us why you skipped the May meeting?
Sorry.
Well, I will totally take that because we are all new to this process. So this was kind of handed to us. So I was expecting a meeting invite, and I didn't get one. So I will take full responsibility for that. And then in June, I obviously did not submit the correct reports, but I believe I did for this meeting. I submitted everything that was requested of us. A lot of it's learning curve. I'm still learning what is expected of us because we have Arizona campus as well as the academy, which rolls up to a parent company. So not only am I new to this company, but I'm also new to this whole process. So I apologize if anything is done incorrectly. I'm trying very hard to do everything properly.
And thanks for jumping in and adding that you didn't submit the June documents. Mr. Coulter, are you going to add something?
Yes, I was. Thank you. And good morning to the board. Just to let you know, this is all very important to us. I was told about this a couple hours ago, and I had a packed schedule, and I just cleared it. Anything and everything was on it to be here for the meeting. So I'm the senior manager at Academy, working on being general manager, so I'll be overseeing the Academy as a whole. So part of our numbers being lower, I would just like to say it's advertising. So we run a very quality class, and like Allison was saying, we do have a parent company, and we do a lot of different things in the inspection world. So when you think of us, we're a growing company, we're doing very well. When you think of like Porch Group or InterNACHI, like we're trying to be not just a school, but an overall major player in the home inspection world. So the revenue we do generate, it's based on the quality of our class. We get inspection companies that just send people to us for training. You don't see us like on Google, like what I call like the usual suspects, where we're just pumping Google full of money to run our classes and just fill up the seats. You know, we're very well known for having a quality class, and we plan on growing, and you know, we're at a lot of different things. We have our community, we have IGO Network, where people can book inspections all over the country through our network, which is a major thing that we're working on. So again, very quality class that we run. We're very well known among the inspection community. I know our numbers are down a little bit, but we are growing, and have big things planned. Inspection company owners across the country know us. I'll get a call sometimes when someone wants to hire some inspectors. They'll call me directly, and I can just deliver some graduates, you know, on the spot for a company. So we really help people be able to expand their businesses and grow. So I can answer any questions that you have as well, but I just wanted to touch on a few topics there.
Sure. Questions from other board members? So I guess the first thing, and so thanks for your apology, Ms. Macy. But the problem is, you know, when we, it's rare for someone to not show up for a board meeting, number one, and then it's like doubly rare to skip a meeting, and then, you know, I think it was Ms. Rome sent three emails requesting information in late May and June. And I'm not saying this to call you out, but really ultimately, Mr. Coulter, you know, when new people come on board, having a license in a state is, is one of the prerequisites to being able to operate an educational institution in the United States. And what it calls into question for us is just the overall institution's administrative capabilities and just basically having your act together. And if I sound a little bit annoyed, it's because every time we meet, it means that we, each trustee here gets a packet of information, and we probably spend, 5 or 6 hours before the meeting, to go over it. And so, frankly, I still can't quite make sense out of all of the materials that we did receive. This isn't a renewal today, but, I expect and all of us expect, everything to be delivered in a timely manner and in a complete manner. And if I'm irritated because those of us on the board, spent a lot of time trying to figure this out, that probably pales by comparison with the amount of time that staff has spent, trying to chase down, information. And at this point, I'm not sure that we still have all of the information. I think you guys are going to be at the next finance committee meeting. and get with staff and make sure that we have your budget and enrollment projections for your Arizona campus. We do not have audited financial statements. We have those as well. And, you know, I don't know if that's comprehensive or not. The questions that I have are, it seemed like you were talking about your finances on your balance sheet. You know, your current ratio in 2022, was pretty good at 1.25. And then in the beginning of 2023, and I know it's unaudited, it's the first quarter, it's down to 0.34. And I just wonder what happened, because also I know that in October 22, you had an infusion of capital. It looked like a $2.3 million infusion of an investment there. And so I would have expected it to go in the other direction.
Well, that investment is for the company as a whole, not just the academy.
Okay.
So like Waylon said, we have multiple divisions of our company. So that was not, and really that was specifically for our software side and not our academy.
Okay. And so the software side, and again, you know what I'm going to do is we're going to see you guys at the next meeting. The next finance meeting. And since I chair the next finance meeting, it would be good for everything to be just like presented, like complete and in a way that like, you know, it's not difficult to kind of parse what we need to figure out. All right.
Yes.
Okay. I do have a question on the audited financial statements. So we do not have an independent CPA firm that audits our financial statements. So that's why that hasn't been submitted to you.
So, and is that for the parent company or for Inspection Go?
For the parent company. For both.
And what's the net revenue or the net income? I'm sorry. What's the total revenue for your parent company?
For 2022.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
Let me look that up. I apologize. I have 2023 up. I do not have 2022.
Oh, did you finish 2023 already?
Just first quarter. No, I just have the first quarter financials up in front of me. I didn't have the full parent company. I'm sorry, I can't find that right now.
Okay. I have, in 2021, you lost $1.2 million. Is that kind of?
Yes. Problem? I'm sorry. I have it up now. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, like, what was the total revenue for, you know, fiscal year 22?
$391,000 loss.
Okay. But what was the total revenue, not the net revenue?
Educational revenue or revenue as a whole?
I guess both. Go for it.
Okay. Well, revenue as a, or for the educational piece was $376,000.
Okay. And total revenue?
Total revenue. Let me pull that up. I'm sorry, I would need to pull our financials. So total revenue for 2022 was
$674,000. Okay. I don't know. Do we have a threshold, Mr. LaMountain, for when a school needs either audited financials. So we, smaller schools will do not need an audit, but they do have to have an independent accounting review. So I don't know if which category Inspection Go falls into.
Well, and Dr. Mevin and members of the board, it is dependent on what, again, kind of what we're asking. I think your overall revenue for the school was what?
For the school was $376,000.
Yeah, so that
2022.
Yeah, so that would require audited. You know, I think Dr. Mintman and members of the board, in order to make this process go a little smoother, I will send to the institution, once again, the Arizona Administrative Code that talks about what you need to have for your finances. I think, in part, that is one of the challenges that we've had with tracking down some of the information, is that we either don't receive it or we receive it late. Certainly, I question the size of the organization and their not having an audited finance package for us. So I think perhaps to expedite this, maybe I have a conversation with the institution next week and line things up so that when we get to the September board finance meeting, we'll have a better package from the institution to be able to show the finance committee and potentially bring them back before the board again in October.
That would be appreciated. Thank you, Kevin.
Yep. Okay. All right. Good. See you guys next time.
See ya.
All right. Hold on a sec. I'm going to do a mindful moment. I'm going to take a deep breath in. I read a really good article. It was titled, "The World's Happiest Man Shares His Three Rules for Life." I can send the link to anyone who wants it. It was from the August 11th New York Times. It's a monk who lives and works with the Dalai Lama. And I think all three secrets are the same. Our three rules is start by being compassionate, continue by being compassionate, and then continue or end by being compassionate. And so, okay, I wish them all. Okay, good. Acacia University. So this is Dr. Leck, and you have quite the interesting change of ownership here. I found this like a fascinating read. So Dr. Leck, please introduce our institution.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. Would someone from Acacia like to provide an opening statement to the board?
Yes. First of all, good morning and good to see everybody. And I'm Tim Molman, the president of Acacia University. Also online are members of the acquiring institution. All these are board members. Okay. And they'll go over the corporate structure that's acquiring Acacia. Samris Mayumi and Anil Aluwalia. I just butchered that name. I'm sorry, Anil. They're in Dubai. And then we have Dr. Kim Hussein, who is in Florida. So I'd like to introduce Samris Mayumi, who will talk about the corporate structure and organization. And we're all here to answer any questions you might have.
And can I ask, excuse me, Dr. Leck, and President Momin, what time is it in Dubai?
Samris?
Yeah, in Dubai, it is now 10:10 p.m. in the night.
Okay, so I don't feel so bad about not rearranging the agenda so that you guys could get some sleep. But okay, thanks.
Samris?
Good morning, Dr. Mittman and the board members. My name is Amraz Maimi, and I represent Akisha University here along with my colleagues, Tim and Anil. I'm right now in India. I'm on a holiday, and Dr. Mittman, it's 11:40 out here in the night, 11 p.m. This was very important for us. So when we got, in fact, we got a notice about this meeting 2 days back, and we wanted to be here so that we could clarify to the board and we could explain the rationale for us to acquire this institution in the U.S. So as Tim stated, we have acquired Westwood Education Group is a higher education-based group we operate out of Dubai. We operate multiple institutions, and we partner with international universities. We have a global presence. We operate out of Dubai. We've got institutions in France. We've got two business schools in France. The group owns an awarding body in UK, based out of Oxford. We've got 7 institutions in UAE, in Sharjah and Dubai. We own 3 institutions in India, including a film school down south in India. So we always wanted to partner with an American university that was a model, and we had the fine opportunity to meet Tim Moman, who owns Akisha University, and when he sounded off his plans for retirement and he wanted to probably look at selling the school, we were quite interested. We started the discussions in 2021 and successfully we culminated the deal in 2021 November. We acquired the school. And ever since we have acquired the school, as you would know that Akisha University has always been a boutique university. It has been a very small operation with a limited number of programs. And it has been, Akisha always had international students as well, apart from the U.S. Students. For us, the objective was to, acquire the university, grow the university, invest in the university, develop the university into multiple schools, multiple disciplines over a period of time. So ever since we have taken over the university, for almost the last 18 months, we've been investing a lot in development of the university. So we've invested in learning management systems. We've got new systems which have come here. We've invested in new technologies. We've invested in new products. We're developing new products. We've got the business school program, which has been approved by the Arizona board. We've already got the licensure permit on that. We made the submission. Our plan is to expand the business school offerings as well as, also introduce computing and other tech programs eventually. The roadmap is over the next 12 months, we intend to develop the portfolio to probably take it up to 10 programs. 10 new programs is what we're looking at, School of Business and School of Computing. As far as the legal structure and the ownership structure is concerned, Westwood Education Group is a UAE-based entity. We operate from a jurisdiction called the Abu Dhabi Global Markets. That is a licensing authority. We have a holding company, and Akisha is 100%. Akisha is 73% owned by the Westwood Education Group, Westwood Ventures. That's the holding name of the holding company. So the ADGM company is quite the structure, the way we have kept the structure is we have got the holding company in UAE, which is called as Westwood Ventures, ADGM. And that particular company owns 100% of a newly incorporated company in Delaware. And that particular corporation is called as Westwood Holdings Limited. That particular Delaware corporation owns 73% of Arizona license, C Corp license of Akisha University. So that's the ownership structure. The remaining 27% is owned by a US-based entity called the Sophia Innovation Group. And I've got my colleague and shareholder partner, Dr. Kem Hussein and Dr. Amit Bali. They represent Sophia Innovation Group and they own 27% equity shares of the company. And Dr. Kem Hussein has also been designated as the chair of the board of, we reconstituted the board of governors, we reconstituted the advisory council, and Dr. Kim Hussein is the chair, is the new chair of the board, and we have Dr. Annette Bolling also in the advisory committee. So that's about the structure of Acacia University. Over to you. I'm quite open to answer any other questions you may have.
Well, thank you for that very technical introduction to the change of control. I will definitely have to rely upon my other board members who I can see Dr. Mittman's mind spinning as far as the structure. So thank you for that. When I looked at it, it looks like we are the end approval for the change of control, and that it appears all the other parts have already gone through. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and as far as your structure, you are remaining as president, it appears. Is there a time frame for that, or is that as
of today? No, I guess the time frame is for us to be successful, and I'm committed. I think I'm trying to think now, Kevin. I think it's about 13 years we've been accredited. Never had any complaints or anything go negative, and I'm here to see that my new colleagues have the same success going forward.
Dr. Lick, if I may interject, in continuity. To answer your question, Tim Moman would remain as the president. I'm very thankful to Tim Moman to accept our request to continue as the president. And we also resolved at the ownership board to have Tim Moman throughout in perpetuity as the founding president emeritus of the university. That's how we would see that, because we do not want him to exit the board or the operations of the university.
Thank you for that. When I looked at this, the enrollment in the school, is it about 175 that you're projecting for this year, 2023?
Yes.
Yes, okay, all right. Okay, I have other items, but they're more about documents and materials of the school itself, so I would like to maybe ask my fellow board members if they have questions regarding the actual change of control, finances, structure, those types of items. There goes Paul. Thank you. It took him a minute, but it was there.
Oh, okay. Now I found my mute button. Well, thank you. It's really, as I said earlier, when there's a change of ownership, oftentimes it's a company from another state in the United States, but it's still referred to as a foreign company per the Arizona Corporation Commission. And so I saw a foreign company, and then it was a much more interesting read, as I read through, because you mentioned schools in Africa and in Europe as well as India and the UAE. I was wondering if you could explain the relationship between Acacia and Westford Group prior to the acquisition. I was noting that in the audited statements in note number 12. Acacia owed Westford $3.95 million in a previous year. And I was just wondering what the working relationship was between Westford Group and Acacia. Samus, is this notes from which financials? Yeah, I'm sorry. So these would be the audited financials for Westford Group. It would be under the related party transactions, and I believe it would be the audited financial statements from fiscal year 21.
Oh yes, I can probably attempt to answer that. So Your question was whether we had any prior relationship with Acacia. No, we didn't have. We didn't have any sort of partnership prior to the acquisition. We got introduced to Tim Moman as part of when we were in pursuit for a partnership for an American university. For one of our schools, we wanted to run the education portfolio. We had a strong education portfolio at one of our teacher training portfolio at one of our schools, and we wanted a U.S. partnership. And that's how we actually happened to see Acacia University and got introduced to Tim Moman, and then obviously it developed into that sale. The specific transaction in the audit, I can actually check with my finance department on that particular sum of $3.95 million, but that particular amount which is owed to Acacia University is actually on the books of Westford Education, because we within the group we operate each business vertical as a profit center, or it's a strategic business unit, because we have got almost 12 SBUs working under the group. So the financials which you have read is for the entire group, for the Westford Education group. And the interparty transaction is whatever amount we have spent at the group level, you know, is eventually accounted as Acacia. So obviously that money, whatever the group has spent so far, is to the tune of 3.94 million. Acacia basically owes this money to the group. You know, that's the way the finance accounting has been structured. I think that's why it reflects there in our audit, because the money has actually gone out from Westford. Westford has made the payments to Acacia. So in that sense, Acacia owes money back to the group.
Okay. And I'm not a CPA, and so I'm going to ask either Mr. Wallace, or because I still don't understand it. There's a related party transactions in 2021, which predates this transaction by, you know, a year or two, and due from related parties is Acacia University, due from related parties, $3.954 million. So I'm reading that this is a receivable from Acacia to Westford Group. Am I reading that correctly?
I'll have to probably go back and check on this point, because I don't want to say something which is not factually correct. Okay. In this board. I can come back with that clarification. But my strong belief is that this is due to the internal accounting practice. This money is owed by Acacia. And 2021, we started off our discussions. We started off our discussions in late 2020 during the pandemic, the period of the pandemic. But we were able to sign off the term sheet and, you know, the start date of the contract happened to be in 2021. Obviously, there was no money paid prior to that particular date. So I really don't understand why it reflects in 2021. I can check on that and come back to the board if that matters.
Okay, well, thanks. And I don't know, just for my own edification, either Mr. Wallace or Mr. Ball, do you have, it's the Westford University College Group audited financial statements, combined financial statements, December 31, 2021. And it's in the notes under note 12.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mr. Maimi. I'm asking two of the other two of the other board members are actually accountants, and so I'm putting them on the spot to help clarify, at least for my edification, and it may get you off the hook for doing more homework on this. So I don't know, Mr. Mull or Mr. Wallace.
If the board may allow, probably I could actually get my finance manager or my audit head to probably respond to this. Probably if I'm given another 5 minutes time, I can probably separately check with them.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Please do. Okay.
I'll do that. I'll have to just come up and find out. Yeah.
I need to find that passage if you want me to comment on it or you want to defer to the.
Yeah, if you look in the, if you look in the, Westford, packet, it would be under, COO and then you open that file and it would be under financials and it's the 2021, fiscal year 2021 combined, financial statements. It just didn't, I don't know, Mr., President Moman, do you remember a $3.5 million? Did you get $3.5 million that you didn't know about, or maybe you owed me?
I can definitely say $3.5 million. No, I don't remember it. And if I owe that you, Samus, I'm sorry. I'm not leaving the
room. It says you owe it to the chair of the Arizona. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm pretty sure it's because of the internal.
Why don't we hit pause on this, and then Dr. Leck had some other questions, and so I'll turn it back over to Dr. Leck, and either Mr. Wallace or you'll get someone there.
All right.
Okay, so I think some of my questions have somewhat been answered, but I'm going to ask some of them anyway because it's kind of all related. So I noticed in your supplemental application, it lists a whole bunch of education degrees, and then it starts with the MBA, which you had mentioned, and then it talked about a couple associate programs. But there's some disconnect between materials. So my first question is, are you offering an MBA, and are you offering those associate programs today?
No, we are not.
We're not.
Okay, that is so helpful. Thank you. When and if you do, since you have approval from, it looks like from AZPPSE, your catalog has some interesting statements that wouldn't necessarily apply and or are kind of questionable. So, for example, I think it's in the president's welcome where it says, welcome to the only DEAC accredited program that specializes in education. I think that's, unless you have 100% proof of that, I don't know that I would say that. Do you have proof that you are the only accredited DEAC school that has education? And now that you're offering other things, I think that's not going to necessarily fit either.
Okay, let me handle that. What I think we have there is when we're transitioning from our old website to the new website, that only shouldn't be there. And we've gone through and checked a lot and changed a lot because DEAC wouldn't approve part two of the application unless we had that done. So I don't know the timings of all this, but that is an obvious error, and we will correct that immediately.
I saw that in the catalog. Just FYI, it's in the catalog.
And I, in full disclosure, we found other things that they've been very good at. We have people look at this all the time and a whole team, and we found numerous things because there's things lost in translation between here and there. So anything like that, we appreciate it and we'll correct it immediately.
Okay. No problem. On the same vein, in accreditation, it refers to, DEAC also as a nationally recognized accrediting agency. We talked about that earlier in the meeting, right? That's gone away. So it's, institutional accreditation, probably what you would refer that to.
Yeah. Jennifer, the one thing I'll comment on that is that what we've always found is that we'll go up and be especially in teachers. We'll have teachers come in and they say, well, does our state and school recognize you? And in their statutes, they have regional.
Yeah. That's
so even though it was changed at the DOE level, at the state level, a lot of schools still refer back to regional versus national.
Well, and your accreditor probably would have had it corrected as well with them. So I would point to them since they're the one that you're referring to,
yes.
Right? Instead of a state per se. And I do understand that really caused a lot of confusion. And it obviously, even though it was years ago, it still happens. So the next thing is, based on what you're talking about, and you'll see why I kind of got wrapped up in this, was your goals and objectives that's also in your catalog talks about how you are redefining graduate education. And it only refers to graduate education. So by adding associates, that kind of obliterates that thing. And so you're just going to find yourself in a disconnect throughout, you know, mission all the way down when you start to introduce those. So that was where I got confused of, you only say you offer graduate, but you have associates on here. Additionally, in the enrollment agreement, there's something that in the Doctor of Education in Educational Leadership, there's a statement in there that says completion of the doctoral degree program does not automatically confer a teaching certificate, nor is it a guarantee of passing the examination and receiving a teacher certificate. And I found that to be completely confusing because it implies that there is a possibility of doing such things. And I would suspect that unless you have approval from a state, or have done any type of that research, that would, number one, be on a state-by-state basis, and number two, would require you to disclose that way, right? So this kind of implies that that's an option, and this doesn't have any type of, and then on the admissions requirements, I think you say that you have to already be a teacher.
Yes.
Right? So I think these things are maybe disjointed. I think you have good intent, but I think it's either strong of this does not lead to it.
Right.
I mean, it's probably what you mean, but it doesn't come across that way. It comes across as if it's a maybe.
Yep. You know, again, I'm sorry you had to point some of these things out to us. Actually, just to show you how much we're trying to do it correctly, we have not only we have two consultants that were hired to make sure we're following and having the verbiage as we do this transition from our website to their website. And Samer's going to talk about one of the consultants, but we also have a second who's gone through several reaccreditations with other DAC schools also on board. So we're desperately trying to do it the correct way, and all these things. And good point. I can say I have not reviewed the new site like I did the old site, but we will. We had Samer, do you want to talk about the people you've hired to help? Your speaker's off.
Tim. So when we, Dr. Lesh, when we wanted to do the transition of the website, we actually kind of reviewed a lot of contents in there. We had a marketing consultant working on it on the marketing side of things. And internally, we had a very senior colleague who's presently the Dean of the School of Education, as well as a provost, were involved in a committee to review all the marketing pack and all the marketing assets before we published that. And I definitely agree that only remaining in the president's welcome is an obvious error, and we will definitely have that removed at the earliest. And we also made, I'll also make a note of that valid point which you've raised, regarding the Doctor of Education AD program. We definitely work on that, and then we get that rectified.
That's okay. This is, for anyone who knows me, this is how my brain works. So it's, you know, take it for free advice, and I think Paul's laughing at me right now.
Thank you. Thank you for that input.
Another thing, this is somewhere. It might be in the catalog or some of the materials. This is where you actually state that Acacia University offers graduate degrees for current teachers to achieve their professional goals. And it's a disclosure notice to U.S. students. But what I thought was interesting was that it only referred to U.S. students. But as I understood, like, the history, when I read the history of the school, you're enrolling international students. But this one thing about licensure is only for U.S. students. And so I wondered, you know, you might want to consider what the international students would need of that equivalent, if there's equivalent to that information. Another thing, on one of your marketing pieces, it had, it's a program flyer that you guys gave to us. It's a degree programs flyer, and there's a couple bullets that I had concerns about. It's one of them says accredited by the largest and most reputable online accreditation organization. So many schools are online now, and I'm not sure if that is the largest. I think you might want to revisit that particular statement because it might be a little bit very kind to them, but I'm not sure wholly accurate. And then there's another one that you say you have online materials, resources, online library system, and e-textbooks provided at no charge. But in your enrollment agreements, there's charges for all the e-textbooks. There's the fees that are there, right? I think it's like printed book, and then it has a fee for e-books. So I think there might be some things you need to look at in those materials.
Definitely, we'll look into it, Dr. Lick. I just wanted to comment. We're coming up with a new tuition fee pattern, which is kind of linked to a scholarship scheme as well, and we have kind of waived off a lot of fees. So probably that was a rationale for the marketing team to pick up on free learning material. So the idea what we are proposing is to say that the student doesn't pay anything extra for any learning support. We have developed the completely revamped new LMS learning management system with access to one of the best libraries in the world, and that's given free as a learning tool for all our students. So we are working with a company called ProQuest, and we have integrated the ProQuest library onto the, as you are aware, onto the LMS, and that's given free. So that has a lot of ebooks and textbooks which are there available free for the students. But we have not rolled it out completely. It's already, we're just in the transition stage now.
Yeah, and right now it just doesn't match, right? But if you were going to say ebooks in the online library, it's just not written that way, right? It's like resources, online library, and ebooks. And, right, a lot of your courses, they have to have materials. And so it just makes an assumption that you don't have any charges for those books, and they're in the enrollment agreement. So I give that to you from an outside perspective of what that looks like.
Yeah, I will say this is part of the transition things and little points. And Samrus and Neil have heard us say, we don't say free, you know, and we don't use the word guarantee, different things, but there's some things we've talked about. We will fix this.
Okay, great.
We'll definitely fix it. It's a very valid point. We'll make note of it.
No problem. Okay, so that is the items I noted. So going back to with Scott and Dr. Mittman reviewing the financials, and or any other board members have any questions?
Yeah, Dr. Mittman, this is Scott Wallace. What was your question? I've looked at the financial statements. Your question about related party transactions?
Yeah, I was just wondering, you know, why I was trying to understand a $3.5 million related party transaction that was owed to Westford by Acacia at a time that predates the relationship. I was trying to understand, maybe Westford was providing consulting services, maybe Westford was providing other contractual services. Am I reading that correctly? Like that, you know, according to that note, it's a related party transaction where $3.5 million is due from Acacia to Westford.
Okay, let me find that again. You know, what you do see in the financial statements is that the company here, the group, as part of their operations, advances funds to other entities, the related parties. It's not part of a lending or investing type process. It's related to their mission, their operations, and that's how it's been presented. I'll look at note 12 here in just a moment as soon as I find it, because that's what you've asked me to do. And you say $3.5 million, and I do see it with $3.9 million to Acacia University. I can't explain that other than that's just part of the this group's operating, it advances money to other entities, amongst other activities that it does. It's
right.
very clear as part of our right. operations and not investing or financing.
Dr. Bittman and Dr. Wallace, I think Dr. Wallace has made a maybe right statement, but I'll still verify that with the auditors and come back to you. I've reached out to the audit head, but it's a bit late in the night, and I couldn't phone him up because I'm on this particular call, so I can't make a voice call. So I've sent him an email note to give me an explanation, but then, as I've explained, it's an internal accounting practice. Acacia is one of the strategic business units, and it's a separate profit center, and the group has actually invested the money, so that needs to basically come back. Acacia owes this money to the holding, the Westford holding group or the group at some point in time. That's what it means.
Okay. And if you could just ask them to clarify, given that this is, this reflects 2021, which predates the official relationship with them. So.
Sure. I'll try to get clarity on that.
Okay. Thank you.
One thing, Samers, I think it would be good to do an introduction to Dr. Hussein, who
yes.
is sitting there. He's sitting there waiting and being very quiet, but he's a very important part of our team. So, Samers?
Yes, Dr. Bittman and the board, I'd like to introduce Dr. Kim Hussein, who's the chair of our board, newly appointed, and Dr. Kim Hussein and Dr. Anand Bowling belongs to Sophia Innovation Group, as I stated earlier, and they own 27% equity shares of the company. The key rationale for us to work, collaborate with Sophia Innovation Group stems from the basic thought that we are foreigners and we're not resident in the U.S. and opening a university in the U.S., we need to ensure that we've got resident directors and people who are really involved in the operations of the business, right, in U.S. And then the whole rationale of having Dr. Kim Hussein, joining hands with Dr. Kim Hussein and Dr. Annette Bowling, and they're there on the board, they're there on the executive management. We wanted to ensure that there's a shareholder, a resident director available in the U.S. because Anil and I and Firoz, representing the group, we live in Dubai and we're non-residents in U.S. So that was the whole rationale of, you know, because we wanted to ensure that the university is quite stable and we don't have any kind of issues being foreigners running a university in USA. So if I may request Dr. Kim to probably introduce and, you know, maybe share his thoughts as well as Dr. Anand Bowling. Might be helpful for the board to know them.
Thank you very much, Samers, Chairman, Dr. Bittman, and distinguished board members and fellow colleagues at Acacia. It's a pleasure to be able to connect with you today. Our relationship with Acacia probably predates Westford relationship. Dr. Annette Bowling and I have had a very strong relationship with Acacia because we come from the accreditation side of the K-12 in the United States here. And a number of our institutions, both in the U.S. and around the world, had some degrees of affiliation with working with Acacia in the past for their teachers to complete different programs of studies or professional development opportunities. And the president, Tim, had introduced us to the Westford Group when there was a change in ownership. And they had asked us if we would be interested in becoming part of the investment group. there was an earlier time in our lives when we did consider that, and we had set up a company called Sophia Innovations Group that was established in the state of Arizona, where Dr. Bowling resides, Dr. Ned Bowling. And we had gone through the preliminary DEAC approval for acquisition of the university, and then COVID and health issues on the part of some of our leadership made us withdraw from pursuing, and Westford came on at that time in a much more strategic manner. And that allowed us for this re-engagement. And when we re-engaged to secure a portion of the share, we wanted to make sure that they continued on the same principles and practices that Acacia, when it was first initiated, as well as an opportunity for them to reset and perhaps grow the institutions in other areas. Some of the observations you made, Chairman Whitman and Dr. Lake, we take that very critically at our end, and we will move expeditiously to addressing them. Namely, the one that's reflected on the books. It is our understanding that that had been part of the Westford investment in the university program to ensure stability, and not necessarily a loan from the previous to the previous owners that had to be repaid at a point in time. But we'll definitely work with SAMRAS, President Tim Moorman, and the CFO to address that great concern that you raised on your part. The notes that Dr. Jennifer shared with us, they are very critical. And as President Moorman said, lots of that got lost in translation too. Because they were looking at continuing to market the university in other parts of the world, and some of the information had to be translated. And while I think initially the thought of the school being mainly focused on education, what they meant to say was perhaps solely, as opposed to only in that context, not the only accredited institution. And then later, and that would be at odds with the future plans of perhaps investment and in other products and programs. So that's well noted, and as Tim and Samra said, will be corrected immediately. And the anomaly that you see at times when they write for the graduate level and the associate level is that Acacia at some point in time in its history also had been approved to offer some associate degrees. Perhaps at some time not fully activated and perhaps dwindled out, so to speak. And the new ownership had looked at the possibility of re-engaging, and perhaps that accounts for why some of that still came up in some of our new documentation and our materials posted. The questions that you raised about nationally accredited, we do agree with you, and we'll make significant efforts to correct that immediately and use the appropriate terminologies. The leading online accrediting organization, also that's going to be addressed. And I want to assure you that we, myself and Dr. Bowling, come in from the world of accreditation, and we will move to do due diligence to address that. Actually, in another capacity, Dr. Bowling serves as the Chief Accreditation Officer of Cognia, which is the parent body of NCAA, SACS, and NWAC accrediting boards. So I'll pause for a moment and ask Dr. Bowling if she wishes to say hi to the team here.
Well, thank you for that introduction. And Mr. Chairman, Dr. Leck, and other members of the board, first let me apologize that you can't see me. I'm in Budapest, Hungary today. So I would just like to say that I lived there in the valley, And I, as Dr. Kim said, I am the chief accreditation officer for Cognia, for, which is pre-K through 12. And we understand very clearly what the questions and the issues you are raising. And we will look very carefully at all of the information, and we will ensure that it meets not only the DAC approval, but also your approval, as it is the license established there in Arizona, where I live, that we are, that we use for Acacia University. So I thank you for allowing me time to speak, and I look forward to working with all of you, and please rest assured that as the chief accreditation officer, I'm very willing, able to look at all of these details along with Dr. Kim Hussein as well to make sure everything will be taken care of. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much for that. If any other board members have any questions, taking one last time.
I think you covered them all.
Okay, thank you. Then if I may, Dr. Mittman, make a motion. Okay, I got a thumbs up. So I would like to make a motion that we approve the change of ownership application and have the institution maintain its surety bond in the amount of $15,000. Do I ask them if they agree, or do you, Paul?
Well, I'll second. And then you can have the pleasure of asking if they agree to maintain the surety bond that they already have.
Yes. Yes, we have.
Thank you.
Great. Mr. LaMountain, you want to take the vote?
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Butte?
Aye.
Dr. Butte votes aye. That's 6 ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
Okay. Well, congratulations, President Moman, and the rest of the team at the sort of newly constituted Acacia University. Wish you the best.
Well, thank you very much, and we appreciate everybody's time. And I have to say, over the years, working with Kevin has always been a pleasure. You know, and, you know, he's kind of the guy behind the scenes here, but he always helps us out a lot and keeps us on the right pathway, and we'll make sure we keep doing that. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. All right. So we have two more change of ownerships. I think we can get through those, and then we'll break for lunch, unless somebody gives me like a serious sign of distress. All right, I got a thumbs up. Okay, good. All right, let's move forward. Next up is phlebotomy training specialists. So let's see who we have here. And Mr. Wallace, you are the lead on this.
Yeah, are the representatives from the training specialists on the line now?
Yes.
And you are?
So I'm Monica Sanborn. I'm the National Licensing Director, and I'm Markel Nils. She's also one member of my team, and she's also on the call.
Okay. Thank you very much. I looked at your file. Do you have any – you're applying for ownership change. Do you have any opening comments you want to share with the board here?
Well, not like the previous school. We've been approved and licensed with the board since 2018. Back in 2022, we had a group out of New York called Eden Capital. They approached our ownership team at that time, and, you know, they kind of worked out a plan for purchasing the majority of the membership shares. So our previous owners were Brian Shrew, Derek Bryan, and Kurt Bryan. They are still part of the ownership structure, But Eden Capital now owns 55% of that. So that was finalized on March 31st, 2023.
Okay, when I look at the financial statements for 22, there's a related, well, there's not a related part. There's a transaction where the institution borrowed about $16 million and then subsequent to that distributed lots of the shareholders. The borrowing was called from an unrelated party. Is that the Eden Group now?
Yes.
Or was it back then?
Yes.
Okay. And then, then I look at the purchase agreement, and the purchase agreement, if I understand correctly, shows that the Eden Group, if I'm not mistaken, from those former owners, paid $150 million or will pay $150 million for 55% of phlebotomy training specialists. Do I understand that to be correct?
Correct. Correct.
Okay. So my question is, and then I looked at the credentials of the Eden Group, and they're an equity fund. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. And yes. I don't have, so there was a holding company that was formed. It's called Eden PTS. Holdco LLC. So I don't have any financials for the Eden portion yet because the holding company is brand new.
It does look brand new, so I'm not expecting that you might have financial statements. Does the Eden Group or the acquirer, whoever it is, and this is outside the company, this is a confirm with me, it's a transaction between the equity group and the former majority owners or current minority owners. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So that's been done, and then eventually there'll be financial statements that come through. Is there anybody in the acquirer organization, what do they bring to the table besides financial resources?
So Dina Sedwire, she is the CEO and president of Eden Capital, the CEO and president of Eden PTS Holdco. She's a partner of Eden Capital. And let me just pull open her resume. But Eden in itself, they're known for building education companies. And so they have a CFO, his name is Frank, that's been instrumental in helping us grow, putting our money exactly where we need to be able to grow. The long-term plan of the school is to add a few more medical modalities to our, you know, program offering. So they're helping with that. They're kind of guiding us through that. They have the experience that we're not the first education company that they've purchased. And so being able to pull their resources and their knowledge base in order for us to meet our goals.
Is there any written obligation by the company to distribute minimum earnings to the majority shareholder or owner, excuse me?
You know what? I'm not sure.
There's a commitment under the loan agreement to pay $16 million probably 5 years from now or something like that. I'm not concerned about that. It's not immediate, but it's what the financial statements say. But I guess my concern is the company has in 22 grossed $20 million in revenues and had about $5.5 million, I think the number, of profit. Are those similar to earlier years, 21 and 22, or 21 and 20? I got to go backwards there. So what was the financial performance back then?
So I know the financial performance, like we've never operated where we've owed money. Kevin does have those financial statements. We didn't have the revenue base or the income base that we do for 2022. We're actually really successful even during the COVID pandemic because of the programs that we offer. And so, yes, it would be similar in a growth trajectory and with our owners taking those disbursements as well. But I don't know how that looks exactly with this new group. I know there's some earnout goals that have to be met, but I'm not sure because I don't deal with the financials as far as being like on a CFO level. I'm not sure exactly what that is.
But we're not going to see the $150 million obligation. Excuse me, $150 million transaction in the financial statements because that is between the current minority owners.
Sorry, will you repeat that? My microphone went out.
Okay. we're not going to see the $150 million transaction on the financial statements of a phlebotomy training specialist. Is that your understanding? Because that's a transaction between the current minority shareholders and the equity group.
Correct. I know there's a pool of money that is going to the school as far as like what I was saying with being able to do growth and adding more medical modalities, staff, internal staff, things of that nature, opening more campuses. But no, that 150, a lot of that is, we won't see that on the financials for this next fiscal year end.
Okay. You know, just for my fellow board members, the 22 financial statements showed pretty significant amount of revenues and profit from those revenues. It showed a large, you know, borrowing transaction that pushes the equity of the company into the negative. However, that presumes that the company is going to continue to be profitable and be able to meet those obligations. That's what I can surmise, or that's what I hope, I guess, as much as anything else. Do my fellow board members have other questions of the company?
I have one question, Mr. Wallace. In the board materials, there were several deficiencies that Executive Director LaMountain noted in a May 15th email. And either Ms. Sanborn or Mr. LaMountain, have those been addressed?
Yes. So Mr. LaMountain received all of the corrections for that. And there was, it seemed like there was a problem with us understanding the correct upload where we wanted to upload multiple things to the portal and we had to put it in one PDF. And so a few of those deficiencies resulted from us not understanding how to upload all of the information to the portal.
Right. Yeah, I don't have any other questions. And I just have to say that, like, every time that Mr. Wallace is a lead, it's like a little tutorial. And so I enjoy, keep asking, the questions, Mr. Wallace.
Thank you. Any other board members have questions? Then I'd like to make a motion that we approve the ownership change, for phlebotomy training specialists subject to their maintenance of a $15,000 surety bond.
Second, Dr. Boutte.
And do you, Monica, or the organization agree to the $15,000 surety bond?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Great. We have a motion and a second. Roll call. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte?
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. That's six ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. All right. And our third and final change of ownership is Sessions College. And Mr. Drummond or Dr. Drummond, Do you want to make an opening statement or Ms. Or Dr. Bylow?
Sure, I can make an opening statement. Thank you. Thank you, members of the committee, for your Zen-like approach to this meeting. Okay. I'm Gordon Drummond. I'm president of Sessions College. On this call, we've got Caroline Bylow, who's our CFO. We've both been through the many stages of the change of ownership and preparing all the documentation. So we're looking forward to talking about whatever questions you have about the change of ownership.
Great. Thank you. Let's see. I have to say, I think we've, and I'm not sure how long you've been president, but we've interacted with Sessions going back many years. I think both here, and I also remember at AZ Sarah as yeah. well, if I'm not mistaken. And so I don't have any questions. I found the packet, completely complete. Not completely complete. It was complete and made a lot of, I don't have any questions. Any other board members have questions? This is what happens when your agenda item shows up right before lunch.
Right. We were talking about how it would be advantageous to have a name with an earlier alphabet starting point, but maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah. Well, you could call it Us Sessions College.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if it's useful to say for the record, there's a couple of documents in there about the explanation for the changes. And yes, indeed, we've been fortunate to be, accredited by DAC since 2001, licensed in Arizona since 2009. And through all that period, as indicated in our change of ownership docs, our CEO and former shareholder majority owner was looking for a new owner who could, support the school in a new way and be a safe pair of hands for a transition. Having seen so many colleges in our sector go up and down through transitions and, the inevitable complexities of change of ownership and the change of expertise and all the rest of it. So as you can see in the documents, our new owners have a commitment to retaining our entire management team post-transaction as we, assess our priorities going forward. And we're updating our strategic plan for our November visit that DAC will be giving us. And we're looking forward to a new phase in our operations where, we've been luckily enough to be acquired by a company that has significant expertise, an investment group, I should say, that has significant expertise in nurturing educational companies of different kinds. So that's the relationship that we are. I personally have been president at Sessions since 2011. And this is really a new opportunity for me, and I think for everyone on the team, to go one step better.
And will you and the leadership team stay on as with the college?
Yes.
Yes, we certainly. But there's no immediate plans to change it. There may be some reorientation of roles inevitably over time, with. At the leadership over time, but I have not been asked to leave yet, so I'm optimistic.
Okay. Well, unless anybody wants to make a motion to ask Mr. Drummond, but otherwise, congratulations on the transaction, and we look forward to hearing good things from Session College as you move forward.
Thank you.
All right. And so unless there's any other questions, I am going to make a motion to approve the change of ownership application and obtain a surety bond in the amount of $15,000. Do you agree to the $15,000 surety bond?
Okay, we've never had one, so if someone could send us what we need, because we've never had to have one.
Right. I will provide that to you and send you that document.
Okay. Can I get a time frame? Because it will take a little while to get, so I want to make sure we meet the deadline.
By the end of today, I will get you the document.
Okay, great. Thank you.
All right. So I made the motion. They agreed. We need a second.
I'll second. This is Dr. Leck.
Okay. Mr. LaMountain.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte?
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. That's 6 ayes, no nays. That motion passes.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
All right. It is 12:10. We are going to take a 20-minute lunch break. And Mr. LaMountain, do we need to make a motion for that, or we just say we're going to go to lunch?
Yes, you need to adjourn.
Okay.
And then with a coming back at 12:30.
Okay. So I'm going to make a motion that we adjourn at 12:11. We're going to return at 12:30. Can I get a second, please?
A second.
I'll second that, okay. Scott Wallace.
And I think since we still have business, do we need to vote, Mr.
Yes.
All right, let's vote.
Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. And Dr. Boutte?
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. That's 6 ayes. I will see you all at 12:30. Dr. Mittman, we have board members.
I have a mouthful, though. Okay. Twelve 12:31. The Arizona Board for Post-Secondary Education meeting on Thursday, August 24th, 2023 is now in session. Okay. So, next up, review discussion possible action. This is a Finance Committee referral to the board.
This is not.
No, that's right. That's not. I'm like way behind. Hold on. All right. Provisional license renewal. Richmondale College. Dr. Leck, are you set?
As set as it's going to get.
All right, let's do it.
Would someone from the institution like to make an opening statement?
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Ninya Chan, and I also have our two directors, Dr. William Talboys and Dr. Yolanda Tudor, who joined us here. So I'm going to start. So in the last 2 years that we operated, we had some negative balances in our income statement. This year, we submitted our April 30 financials, and we are in the positive right now. So that's a good indicator. And then at the moment, we are working on our DEAC accreditation preparations. We're busy on that. We have a lot of adjustments in terms of our processes based on the requirements, especially the requirements from DEAC that we are aligning. And also, we are adjusting our website right now so that we can comply with the requirements of DEAC. So Yolanda is actually leading the compliance activities. So she is our operations and director of operations and compliance. Yeah, so if you have questions, we're here to answer your questions. Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you for the opening statement. I was going to probably ask you a little bit more specifically on the accreditation journey. If I remember correctly, you have engaged in this process right since 2019. Is that correct?
We opened the school in 2019. However, we got our application approved in 2021 of April. So we have to operate for 2 years so that we can apply for accreditation. That's why right now we are working on our accreditation.
Okay, so you started your first students in 2021 then as well?
Yes, that's right.
Okay, all right, okay. So for my clarification, Mr. LaMountain, the renewal of provisional is because the accreditation has not been obtained yet. Is that correct? Just so I understand.
Yes, Dr. Luckman, Dr. Luck and members of the board, the institution will stay on a provisional until licensure, or excuse me, until accreditation is either granted or not granted, and then they would either have their license revoked if they were, or changed to a non-accredited, and or they would be an accredited institution based upon the final DEC.
Okay, thank you, sir. That's helpful. So can you guys go into a little bit more detail of the processes that you're working on for accreditation purposes?
Yeah, so we are looking into the requirements for application and the SER, and we have a lot of things that we have to align, from admissions to withdrawal policies, including our catalogs. So we have a lot of those. Policies that need to be uploaded to the websites. And then, especially the SER is quite long. So we are working on that. We ramped up our manpower to really, you know, complete that based on our schedule. Although based on our schedule that we submitted, we are already delayed. We are waiting for the renewal, the license renewal, so that we can submit that as well. So yeah, hopefully we can submit that like probably next month. Hopefully we can complete all the documentations.
Okay, that helps me because so it's like I have some feedback on things I think that are related to those areas, and I can just give you some examples. When you're looking at progression, right, students staying in school. Your policies indicate that both undergraduate and graduate students have to maintain a 2.0 GPA for progression. I've actually never seen a graduate program have a 2.0 for progression. It's usually a 3.0 on the scale. So it's just something to perhaps that's on your list to look at as far as that's concerned. Admissions, I noticed that you have to have a high school or equivalent, but there's no other qualitative components to that, or even quantitative. There's no GPA requirement or anything like that. And I wasn't sure if that was intentional or not, but it's things that caught my eye from a institution going for accreditation. I don't typically see that. But.
Yeah, those are noted. I believe we are also looking into that based on the accreditation requirements we are going to comply. So we will do some adjustments in terms of these requirements. Yeah.
Okay. You have a statement. It's in your catalog. It says some countries and states have licensure requirements for graduates of education-related degree programs to practice. It's a nice statement, but if you have students in those states, you need to tell them whether or not your programs lead to those. So I think you have a generality, but do you specifically address that for students that you're enrolling?
Right now, that's what we have. So yeah, we will do the adjustments accordingly.
Okay. There's also, I noticed you have two cancellation policies right in a row. One is the 3-day one, and then there is essentially a 5-day one. And I think it's confusing because they say pretty much the same exact thing except for 3-day versus 5-day. So potentially having a discussion, this is a Kevin question, but I don't think the state ever minds that it's longer than what the minimum requirement is, but having one versus two, because there's no difference that I can tell in both of those. So I think that would end up being confusing.
You are correct. We followed the Arizona Administrative Code. We are actually changing that to 5 days because that's what the accreditation says. So we are. I'm not sure if that's something that you know will be in conflict with the Arizona Administrative Code, but we will submit to you the updated one once we finalize the catalog, so that you can look into that. We are now looking into the IAC accreditation.
Keith.
Hi, Dr. Lick. Yeah, the 72-hour cancellation notice is required whether they're accredited or not.
So that's the one thing. There's five or six things, and I can send that to them, that every institution has to have on their enrollment agreement. And that's one that doesn't make any difference. It has to have that. It can go be, if it can be more than that, but not less. Hope that helps.
Yep. And that's what I was thinking for him to work with you guys on it, because it's like, they're literally right in bed. I'm just like, is it three? Is it five? I don't know. You know, so.
Yeah, doctor, just email me and we can get that straightened. That won't take long.
Great.
Thank you.
Okay, so I think that, I mean, that's kind of the gist. Like, I have those kinds of things probably you throw out that you need to address, but I think you already know that. So with that, I guess I would ask my fellow board members, does anyone have any questions for the institution? Okay, hearing none or seeing none, then Dr. Mittman, I would like to make a motion, if I may.
Please do.
Thank you, sir. I would like to motion that we approve the provisional non-accredited degree granting license application with the stipulation that the $15,000 surety bond is maintained.
I will second.
Thank you, sir. Does the institution agree to maintaining the surety bond?
Yes, agree.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Dr. Mittman?
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace? Mr. Wallace, you're on mute. Give us a thumbs up. I think I got a thumbs up, so that's an aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye, and Dr. Boutte.
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. By your vote of six ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Next up, we have a conditional to regular license renewal, and our board lead is Mr. Ball.
Okay. Is Mr. Rodriguez present?
Mr. Rodriguez is present. Hello, Mr. Ball. Hello, everyone.
Good. Would you like to make an opening statement?
I would. Thank you very much. So my name is Norman Rodriguez. I'm the president and CEO of Top Applicant, doing business as Elevate. I am very excited to be here and very thankful to the board. Since approving us last year and allowing us to operate, we've been able to focus relentlessly on students. This month alone, having more students come back to us and say that they found placement in this career path that we service, that we focus on, which is all customer-facing careers in technology. This month, really in the past 3 weeks alone, we've had more students come to us saying that they found employment here, regardless of the big tech recession, than we typically enroll in a month. So we're really excited. We hope that, you know, as an outcome of this conversation, we're able to maintain our ability to operate for many years to come and continue to meet and hopefully exceed expectations.
Okay, thank you. I have a few questions, mostly centered around your financial statements. So let me ask those questions before I open it to the board. When I look at your first quarter 2022 and first quarter 2023 profit and loss statement, your tuition went down by $662,000, which was 72%, and your net income went from $666,000 down to $110,000 in that same quarter. That's a drop of 83%. So something happened. Maybe you can help explain what happened there that resulted in these decreases.
Absolutely. So I think the first change to highlight is first quarter of 2022 was prior to our approval. And we had a different structure there and a different financing and fee structure. So we were actually operating with a $25,000 fee structure, in which case, after, you know, having the ability to be approved, we were able to make some changes, develop our curriculum and our operations so that we can offer a tuition that's 50% of that, $12,500. So that likely has impacted on our financials. Second, in December of 2022, we went through a renewal process with one of the a few different vendors that we typically work with. That students may choose to move forward with in terms of taking out a loan that provides, you know, upfront cash to the school. And so that process was, you know, pretty much 6 months in length. So our revenues took a hit, our income took a hit during the first quarter or so this year.
And I noticed in comparing your 2022 results with 2021, your legal fees skyrocketed.
Yeah.
Are you being sued by anybody?
We're not being sued. In 2021, I think when we were up, or 2022, when we were up for our initial request to be approved and to operate, we were coming off the heels of having had a complaint filed against us in December 2021. And so throughout 2022, you know, we, well, it was settled prior, but we had some outstanding balances that we paid. So a majority of the cost was, you know, first couple quarters in 2022, but we've paid, you know, consistently a couple thousand on some remaining bills after that.
Okay. Now, your largest asset, obviously, is your accounts receivable. You have no cash, but you have a lot of accounts receivable. So what is your process for collecting those receivables? Because that seems to be an issue.
Yeah. So, you know, last time we checked, I think we were at 20 to 30% payment on time, on track for accounts receivable. We use a servicer, TFC, that's licensed in all 50 states to be able to service our students. However, we have, you know, some decisions that we get to make now, and why we've submitted it in our enrollment agreement. Some changes that may have been seen is some of our challenges. You know, historically, we've had students who weren't in a position where their credit score could, you know, be justified to take out any sort of loan for the program. We've said, hey, that's not a problem. This isn't going to be a barrier to your success. You can join into a payment plan or a retail installment contract with us. Payments would begin 30 days after the program ends, and we've identified that as a significant reason why we've had lower payment rates. So our plan going forward has been to make small, you know, moderate payments during the program, $100 a month, that may increase afterwards, but to develop good payment behavior. And then, you know, once we made the change after, during the second quarter of 2023, we brought on some new vendors that have higher approval rates for students, for student financing, student loan, or personal loans. So that's been a really positive impact as well. We've gotten some more cash in the door on a monthly.
Now, your tuition is $12,500, and that covers a 10-week program?
Correct.
And you're at school 40 hours a week?
4 hours for the, so it's 4 hours a week and 10 weeks, so 40 hours in total. We do have a lot of content. We have over 70 hours of content assignments. We did not identify that as the course hours, in the course hours, because we wanted to make sure that student graduation, pass, fail, et cetera, was based on their attendance, seeing as the curriculum is really focused on such a hands-on skill, sales. You know, it's that their ability to pass, fail really is, are they showing up to class? Are they engaging with their instructor, et cetera?
Okay. I noticed in the accountant's report that you submitted to the board, that report doesn't comply with standards. It's outdated language.
Okay.
So I guess a question I have for Kevin is, they got $18 million in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
Does that require an audit, or is a review satisfactory?
No, an audit.
An audit?
I think maybe that number is incorrect. 18 million might not. I think it's 1.8.
Okay, let me look here.
And that could just be, you know, an error on accounting. I don't know. But we know it's not 18 million.
It does seem outlandish.
Yeah. I'd like to say we were that successful.
Yeah, let's see. Hang on here just for a second. Your 2022 financials. Well, your 2022 financials show 1.895 million.
Yeah.
Almost 2 million. So, Kevin, you're saying that requires an audit, not a review.
Correct.
Okay, so we got to have a plan, I guess, for you guys to have your statements audited.
Okay.
I'm not sure whether we'd have to go back to 2022 and start there. I guess that'd be the logical place to start since 2023 isn't over with yet. Is that something you can do?
Absolutely.
The firm that prepared your reviewed financial statements, they're not CPAs, so you'd have to get a CPA who's, you know, properly licensed in order to do that audit. So let's put that on the agenda for you guys to do that. Those are sort of the questions I had. So if anybody else on the board has any questions, speak up, please.
Like I said with Mr. Wallace's lead earlier, I had one question and you asked it about the drop in revenue in quarter one. And so I'm good. Thanks for doing such a thorough job, Doug.
Sure. Anybody else? You're not in Title IV, so there's no issues there. So I guess hearing no other questions, I will make a motion to approve the conditional two regular non-accredited vocational program with the stipulation that the $137,350 surety bond be maintained. Do you agree to that stipulation?
I agree to that stipulation, sir.
Okay. So I'm looking for a second.
This is Scott Wallace, accepting it.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly.
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte.
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. By your vote of six ayes, no nays, the motion passes. And Norman, we'll get out. We'll get in touch with you next week. And between Jacqueline and myself, we'll review the financials and we'll get you on the right track.
Thank you, sir. And thank you, everyone, so much.
Thank you, Norman.
Okay. Moving on to new applications. Our first school is Ashland University, and before we introduce them, I do want to say that this was, I'm not sure which was, I would say this was one of the most interesting applications that I've seen in a long time, and I'm very eager to learn more about the university and the work that you are doing here in Arizona. And so, please, who do we have present? I gave this great lead-in, so somebody needs to be here.
Samuel Jarstra is here. I'm the provost at Ashland University.
Okay, well, great. Well, it's really nice to see you, Dr.
Jarstra.
Thank you. Do you want to make an opening statement?
I do have an opening statement. I hope this will shed some light on why we're with you. And we thank you so much for working together on this so far. So Ashland University is a private, not-for-profit university in Ashland, Ohio. We were founded in 1878 by German Baptist Brethren, and our mission is guided by a Christian heritage. We're a comprehensive private university that provides transformative learning experiences, shaping graduates who work, serve, and lead with integrity in their local, national, and global communities. We have been serving students in the incarcerated space since 1964. In 2015, the U.S. Department of Education established the Second Chance Pell Experimental Sites Initiative to provide Pell Grants for incarcerated individuals, allowing them to participate in approved post-secondary education programs. Ashland was one of those 67 colleges selected to participate, and in the last 8 years, we've expanded into 13 states and the District of Columbia. The partnership with Arizona began in 2018 when the head of the State Department of Corrections, Rehabilitation, and Reentry Education Programs attended an AU workshop, and he was looking for a post-secondary option for the state and subsequently invited the university to enter the state. AU started operating in three facilities in Arizona in 2020, expanded into three more the following year, and we serve approximately 600 students in the Grand Canyon State. In summer of 2023, the FAFSA Simplification Act reinstated Pell Grants, as you probably know, for all individuals who are incarcerated. And in preparing for that transition, we reached out to the Board of Private Post-Secondary Education and discovered that we were remiss in not having applied for a license. We appreciate the board's willingness to work with us to ensure we can continue to serve students in your state. We want to thank the staff for supporting us through the licensure process. Thank you all for giving us the opportunity to talk about the work we do in Arizona today. Thank you.
Thanks. Well, thank you, Dr. Jarst, for I have to say, you know, I enjoyed reading the materials. I'll just summarize, you know, from a financial standpoint, the school is in on solid ground. The change in net assets for the last 2 years were $25 million and $30 million for 2022 and 2021, respectively. The school's composite scores are last year 3.0, which is the highest it can be. And also, I'll also add that the default rate among graduates from Ashland University has ranged from 1.2% to no more than 4.1% over the last several years. And so the school, you know, does a good job stewarding its financial resources, and its students do well after, the default rate is a proxy for how students are doing afterwards. But if we can't infer too much, it's nothing, certainly nothing bad to have such low default rates. Mm-hmm. I did have just a couple of questions. I really don't have any questions about the finances. I'm not sure. Do any other board members have questions about either finances or any of the other materials, such as catalog, enrollment agreement, et cetera? I don't hear anybody. And so I do have a few questions, and I can't remember. You know, I think we have 11 schools today, and so at a certain point, they all kind of blur into each other in some of the details. Although you did stand out in being the only student body that are incarcerated. And you know, I did see the pictures on your website for Ashland University in Ashland, Ohio. It looks like a lovely campus also. There was some references to tablets that you use. And so could you just explain because I know that you have two staff members at each of the six correctional facilities. Mm-hmm. But it looks like it is 100% online program. And could you just explain how do you do that?
I'm going to call on one of my team members, Mary DeLow. Are you there, Mary?
I am. I was just trying to find where I could unmute. So, yeah, my name is Mary DeLow, and I'm the Director of Academic Services for Correctional Education. I've been with Ashland for about 5 years and joined Ashland in for the Correctional Education Program. And what we call the tablets, we call them end user devices. And when we went to Arizona, and Greg Denning here is the state director, so he can provide a little more information about, you know, how the tablet, the end device works if you've got specific questions in Arizona. But the student is given an end user device, and we use the LMS JPEG or Canvas Lantern. So all of the course content is delivered, and the course content is the same that's delivered on campus. It's just developed for and end user, the tablet user. We cannot use discussion boards, but we have many other tools that we can use to engage the students. So the content is developed through the academic departments at Ashland University. All the deans and the department chairs approve the faculty developers. The content is the same as that is being taught online in our regular programs as well as on campus. So it's all developed through a tablet and or the end user device. Does that kind of answer your question there?
Yeah, that answered that question, but then it prompts a bunch of other questions.
Good. Okay.
So I'm just wondering, is it Ms. DeLow or Dr. DeLow?
It's Mary DeLow.
Hi, Mary. It's Paul. So given the, you know, the circumstances of, you know, backgrounds and other circumstances for, I would imagine, many of the incarcerated students, what additional steps, what are your retention rates? What are your graduation rates? And what kind of steps does the university have to have in place to foster, you know, persistence and success among, you know, you're saying it's the same courses as a student, you know, on ground would take, but, you know, most of the people, you know, I imagine, you know, come from, you know, circumstances that may disadvantage them from a success and persistence standpoint.
Sure. So let me talk a little bit about the faculty perspective. All the staff that teach in the corrections program are staffed by the department chairs. They have been chosen by the department chairs to staff, so they're subject matter experts in their area. What we do is we train them in terms of how to react to the correctional education student. For example, they are able to communicate with their instructor via the message system. So it's our responsibility in terms of quality control to make sure that the instructors are in fact responding to the students' messages and how we can communicate with the students. If they've got questions, when they're grading, we watch the grading to make sure that the grading happens within, you know, 1 or 2 weeks so that the students are given direct feedback. So there's a little more accountability, if you will, because we want to make sure that our students in correctional education have the resources that they need. Another thing that we have is that our students have access to an e-tutor in math and in writing. So it's, if they've got a question, it's not, they can reach out to their professor if they have a question about writing or math, but sometimes we know that they need someone else they need to talk to. So we have built a program, we have e-tutors, so that they can actually communicate with their e-tutors about any questions they might have with content in regards to writing or with math. So they've got that extra support, if you will. We make sure that our faculty, we train them. We have semester overviews. We also have in-semester trainings. We have over 6 in-semester trainings, which we have them come so we can talk about different subjects. And if they've got issues, we allow them the opportunity to touch base. If they have a situation in particular we have a lot of issues. Sometimes, well, we don't have a lot of issues. Sometimes we have, let's put it this way, we have unique issues. Unique yeah. issues that you don't find in the traditional classroom. So we right. have to provide the space for our students to be, I mean, our instructors to be able to, you know, bounce ideas. I got this issue. How do I handle it? So that's, I mean, we provide the space in terms of faculty. So we also have, and you know, I'll bring up one of my colleagues, Kathy, advisors. They have professional advisors. They have access to the professional advisors that if they've got questions about their course progress, et cetera, they have a direct link that they can communicate with their advisors.
Okay. And kind of ballpark, can you give me give us a sense of the retention rates and completion rates for the students enrolled in the correctional facilities?
I'm going to, Kathy, do you?
I'm here. Hi, everybody. Kathy Britton. My title on the page says Director of Admissions Processing. I manage a few other things as well. It's just a very long title, so we don't put it all there. It's good to see you all this afternoon. And I hear you, Paul, asking for a very specific number, and I'm not going to be able to give you that number today. In fact, what I can tell you is that we are in the process of developing measurements for retention and persistence among our students. However, we do graduate and retain large numbers of them. We are not enrolling brand new students every single semester. We are graduating students. We also do a process for our students here for success that allows them to earn their AA along the way so that they can feel as if they've achieved something, as well as if they release earlier than they planned, then they go out into the world with a document that, a transcript that shows some progression toward a bachelor's degree. We also are very proud to say that we will be able to take your students in Arizona when they do release and continue their education on the outside. So we don't leave the Arizona student hanging when they exit the correctional facility. We don't make an empty promise there. We finish with them if that is their desire. So unfortunately, I can't give you the exact rate. Understand that this program, that this degree path, these degree paths has been under an experimental sites initiative where we were asked to measure certain things, and those were not some of the certain things just yet. and I believe that that's coming down the pike as we enter into a new phase. So we liken that to being a brand new baby, and we can get certain things up and going, and then it takes about a 6 or 8 year time frame before we can start to get some good persistence numbers and good retention numbers. So that's on the brink.
Okay, great.
Paul, if I may, I would comment on that as the provost, so that you know we are paying attention. We can say in general that when we have first time students, so they've come in, they really don't know the system. They've never done anything like this before, that very quickly they might say, you know what, I don't think this is going to work for me. Or they go through a semester and mm-hmm. various things happen, and they have challenges and such, and they withdraw or something during that time. But if they complete a semester with us, their persistence, they're going on to the next one, and the next one is much, much more likely that they will keep moving on. The hardest thing for us, referring to what Kathy's talking about, is if there is some kind of an event at a facility, whether it's everyone goes into lockdown, or the technology has some kind of glitch, or there's a behavior issue that comes up, these disruptors make it very difficult to then say, okay, how do we handle that in a calculation of a retention rate? When forces beyond their control interrupted their education, how do we then calculate that in there? And that is, unfortunately, more common across the various facilities that we work within than you, I mean, you probably can't imagine what it's like, but it really does throw a wrench into calculations compared to traditional higher education retention rates.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I was, I wasn't asking from a grilling you standpoint, just out of curiosity to wonder, what would success look like? So you currently have 600 students across the six facilities here in Arizona. Do you have a sense of like what percentage of the prison population does that comprise?
Greg, are you there?
Yes, sir. Arizona currently has about 33,000 inmates incarcerated in Arizona. And so I'm not very good at math, but it's...
Yeah, so it's less than the 30th. We can say that.
Yes, sir. And
so it's probably about a percent of all right. of the inmates, Do you have a goal to get to?
Well, sir, part of our it's not an issue, but the Arizona Department of Corrections has a policy written on the minimum requirements that our students have to achieve. And some of those are, of course, they have to have a GED or a high school diploma. And then their disciplinary record is probably the biggest factor that prevents them from attending. The idea is to make sure that the inmates, when they become students, are going to apply themselves, and we want to reward good behavior, or the department wants to reward good behavior. I say we because I spent 19 years in the department, and sometimes I kind of go back to the we when I talk about the department. But the biggest hurdle that we have is getting the clearances from the Department of Corrections based upon their policy requirements.
Okay. Well, thank you. Okay. My last question. So do you have a physical presence in Arizona? Does the university have, an office here other than the staff who are in the six facilities?
And the answer to that is no, we do not.
Okay.
Other than myself, I'm the state director, so I supervise all the site directors. But other than that, and I work from home.
Yeah, I was just thinking about, I've been involved with a lot of nonprofit organizations in mostly in the Valley. And I know that, for people post-incarceration, the challenges, are significant, like having an address or clothing to get a job or things like that. And I was thinking, at some point it might be nice to connect the university to some of those facilities like St. Joseph the Worker or some of the other organizations on the it's called CAS. I can't remember what the acronym stands for, but there's a campus in downtown Phoenix that has a number of services together. It might be a good synergy with the university.
And thank you, Paul, for that. I would say that it's a great segue to where we're going. We recently hired someone who their task, their charge is truly to develop more for formerly incarcerated and for reentry. And we know that we have to do more connection with those service support agencies, non-government organizations and even other services that are available, local, state kinds of things for our students that are coming to the outside. So absolutely.
Yeah. Well, feel free to reach out. You can reach out to me or to the board staff here. And if I can be of any assistance, I would be happy to.
Thank you, Paul.
And with that, but we're not gonna prove that. No, I'm just kidding. I will make a motion. Let me see, I have it written down here. To approve the regular degree granting license and maintain the $15,000 surety bond. Can I get a second, please?
I second.
Thank you, Kelly. Okay. Mr. LaMountain, we have a, Motion and a second. And since they already have the surety bond, I assume you're going to maintain the surety bond. So let's vote. This would be a first if we lost our executive director on in mid-meeting.
No, you lost me on the mute button, so I apologize for that. I'm back in good shape. Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte?
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. And Dr. Mittman and members of the board, one thing I would like to call out here with the institution, with Ashland, is that they have been just a pleasure to work with. Every single person that we've talked to from Dr. Getzler at the beginning, we had initial conversations. We've met, I think, just about everybody on this call. And to get all six of these applications in and the amount of documentation that it took to do that, I just want to, say thank you very much to the institution for making this what could have been a difficult experience actually go quite well. And hats off to you. You guys did a great job. So thank you.
Well, thank you guys for supporting us. It was, I will admit that when it first we got this task, I was dubious that we could achieve it in the time. But everyone, Ashlyn really pulled together, and everyone at the board staff really helped us. So thank you all. We're really excited.
Congratulations.
Thank you so
much. Welcome to Arizona. All right.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Next up, Max Beauty Academy. And our board lead is Mr. Wallace.
Good afternoon. I apologize. For some reason, my camera's not working, but you can hear me okay, as I understand. Is there a representative for Max Beauty available?
Hi.
On the call?
Hi, it's me. I'm
Maria.
Hi.
Do you have any opening comments you want to share with us, Maria?
I just want to thank the board for allowing me to be here right now. Super excited for this opportunity and to be part of this process. I'm super excited.
Okay. I'm the board lead on this, Maria, and what I went through your information and so forth, and looks like, and you have a wonderful website, by the way, and the material that you process, through our organization seems to all be there. Do I understand it correctly that today you're providing certain services, eyelashes and brows and permanent makeup and things like that to customers?
Yes, I have a salon, Max Beauty Salon, and we will be venturing out into the education aspect.
Yeah, and your website suggests that you're doing that or able to do that, if I understand correctly.
Well, that is, I've had a lot of people request it, but I have not been doing, I want to be a legitimate school.
Okay. Are you going to run the school in your current facility? Is that what you intend to do?
Yes. So when I designed it, I just moved into the space last year in January of 2022. And so when I designed it, I had a vision in mind to grow what the next years would look like. So the way I set it up was that I one day want to be a teacher. So I have it set up as an academy. And I have, when I started the application process in December, I notified my staff that we would be closed, the salon would be closed, and that when we're functioning as a school. So now that I'm in the process of fully becoming a school, then my next goal will be down the road to, maybe expand another location for the salon. But as of now, the priority will be the school, and the salon will be closed on school days.
Well, on school days. So you still provide services to customers, just not at certain times or dates.
Correct.
Okay. Looking through your packet here that you sent us, you have nominal, you know, financial information for us to evaluate. You have some projection of sales for the next 3 years, and you have an explanation for your loss of $700, I think it is, and so forth. Do you have any assistance in terms of producing financial information outside your organization, some expertise?
Do you mean like hiring an accountant or?
Yeah, that would be it, or some organization like that that can produce financial statements that meets our board's requirements.
Okay, yeah, so I did have an accountant help me with that. That's the one that submitted what we submitted, but I mean, I'm willing to get whatever information you need by all means.
Okay, all righty. I mean, I looked at the financial position of the parent, but it was not a traditional financial statement, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, or I missed something. I don't know. Okay.
Okay. I will. It was not. Okay.
Are you licensed by the State Board of Cosmetology or something like that?
Yes, I'm licensed.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm current with all my license.
Okay, you're breaking up, but you have your licenses with the State Board of Cosmetology. So, carving out time and facilities for teaching, that's compatible with what that board allows you to do.
Yes. So as of right now, permanent makeup is not governed by the State Board of Cosmetology. So there are no regulations needed for teaching on that. However, I have to keep up with my own health codes, OSHA, and bloodborne pathogens.
Okay.
But State Board of Cosmetology is changing their structure. So before, as of let's see. So their rulings before, so I'm always going to be certified with them, but they're changing their structure for new students coming in. So I'm trying to create a curriculum based on their standards. And then once I get the approval from the school, then I'll submit the 30-hour curriculum that State Board of Cosmetology's recommendation so that I can be one of their approved educators.
Okay. Thank you. Keith Blanchard, do you have a question?
Thank you.
Hi, Mr. Wallace. Hi, Maria.
Hi, Keith.
I don't believe the Board of Cosmetology doesn't license or regulate permanent makeup because it pierces the skin. It falls under vocational program, and they kind of don't want anything to do with them. So we had reached out to the health board to say, would you guys – it's unregulated. Permanent makeup in Arizona is not regulated. There's no minimum requirements. It's kind of like tattooing. Maria, is that what your understanding is?
Correct. Permanent makeup falls under the category of tattoo, which is not regulated in the state of Arizona. So,
Yeah. But
we're not regulated. I still fall into all the correct standards, protocol, safety that would be required as far as sanitation. All bloodborne pathogens. So I do fall under the, safety zones for any.
That would be the Arizona Department of Health Services, correct?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
But the cosmetology board is not requiring you to do anything with them regarding this program, correct?
No.
Okay. Just want to clarify that, Mr. Wallace. Thanks, Maria. I appreciate it.
Thank you. That was very helpful. Do any of my fellow board members have questions of Maria Maxwell?
I have a question. Thank you very much for being here, Maria, and on this exciting venture. In your marketing strategy and in your projections, you have your first 3 years, $250,000 of revenue, second year, $450,000, third year, $750,000. When I, just to kind of did a little bit of math. So that would be between 100, maybe up to 500 students in the course of a year. How do you plan to recruit that many students?
So I did hire a business strategist just recently. So we are going to, we're going to meet with a marketer to help SEO marketing, of course. But then we're going to be going to all the beauty schools that are already registered in the state of Arizona and then showing them our program. Because there's not a lot of approved schools offering permanent cosmetics. There's so many people that are doing it on the side, and there are these artists that are not doing a job. So we want to go to all different companies, even targeting high school with girls, you know, graduating high school, to bring them over, see if they want to be part of it. Easy to gain your certificate, and it's also, you can do it while you're going to school. Also, you know, you can do it part-time, can do it full-time. It's constantly growing. So our target is physically reaching out to these schools, these organizations that have women that are looking for a new career, even some shelters, you know, maybe just hosting a class that gets our name out there. Are you looking for an easily obtainable new career? Because our programs are, you know, from 4 day up to 2 weeks. A lot more easy to access those types of careers for somebody that's looking to be in part of the beauty industry. And we would be an approved school, not these people that are just handing out these horrible training certificates.
Okay. I guess, you know, it might be good with respect to your business coach to maybe do, and you may already have this, I just don't see it, maybe do a pro forma so that you have, like, let's say, for example, first year, $250,000, and that $250,000 is about 100 students, right? Because, I mean, thereabouts. But what would it look like if you only had 75 students? What would it take? What would happen if you had 50, 25? I don't know. Maybe in the first year, you know, it's going to be a lot of legwork.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to be just investing your time and energy doing that, and develop a budget so that you can make ends meet based on, you know, maybe less optimistic projections.
Yes. And also maybe not this year, but next year going to also online, not for eyelashes, but for permanent cosmetics too. Maybe offering some online programs as well.
Okay. Yeah. It's your school.
Thanks, okay. Paul.
You're welcome. Back to you, Mr. Wallace. And I see Dr.
Yeah, Maria, thank you. I have a question regarding the lash extension classes and that process. As I understand, the Arizona Board of Cosmetology is moving toward lash extension being a licensed process.
Yes.
Which would then shift the approach of your institution in relationship with the Arizona Board of Cosmetology. I wonder if you're looking ahead at that. I believe that doesn't come into play until sometime next year. It is something
right.
That you're going to have to look through.
Yes, and so it's funny because when I filled out my application to be part of this program, I was looking more towards permanent cosmetics. But then so it's already in the process, but then this new structuring behind that licensing is changing, and I thought, okay, well, why don't we emphasize on lash extensions? How can I be part of work directly with State Board of Cosmetology to be one of their approved schools? Because again, there's so many people providing lash extension courses that are not legitimate. And so there's so many girls out there that are learning these things and they're not doing it right, or people are getting, you know, problems with their eye. So if I already have my accreditation, or not accreditation, excuse me, my license, then once I do that, make a 30-hour curriculum, and then once they pass that bill is published, which, like you said, should be early end of this year, if not early of next year, then submit that to them and say, hey, how can I be one of your referred schools? So that is my main goal next.
Thank you. Any other questions of the from the board? Maria, my advice is that you do seek outside help in terms of financial reporting and tracking. And in that process, I suggest that you request of them the ability to separate your customer side of the business with your educational side of the business, just so that you understand how each are performing, and as well as future interaction with organizations like us. Ethan, do you have a question or a point?
Yes, Mr. Wallace, I'm sorry. Hey, Maria, when we're done, maybe tomorrow morning, could we have a phone call? I just want to get, you're doing anything wrong. I'm totally misunderstanding the role of the cosmetology board, and I just kind of want to make sure that we're understanding each other, their board and our board of what they're actually licensing, what the requirements are, and stuff like that. So maybe we can do that tomorrow if you got time in the morning.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry to interrupt, Mr. Wallace.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? I'd like to make a motion to approve for Max Beauty Academy a conditional non-accredited degree with a stipulation that the organization maintain a $15,000 surety bond.
Mr. Wallace, that'd be a non-accredited vocational program.
I'm sorry, I meant non-accredited. I can't read my own writing, apparently. Non-accredited degree program.
Vocational program.
Vocational.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, sorry. I'll second, but to Mr. Wallace's defense, I think he cut and pasted it right out of the board materials because I have the same. I was going to call it a degree also. Either way, it's all good, Ms. Maxwell.
Taking the heat on that.
So it's been moved and seconded. So
it's moved and seconded. So Ms. Maxwell, do you agree to the surety bond maintaining?
Yes.
Great. And I apologize to the to Mr. Wallace and to the board members of cutting and pasting. Should have caught that. Didn't. So.
I was saying we cut and paste. We just cut and paste whatever you give us in terms of the motion.
Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck.
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace.
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball.
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly.
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte.
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. By the vote of six ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
All right.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right. Alas, the school with the letter that begins with the letter U, unfortunately, is here at the end of the agenda. Dr. Leck, take it away.
Thank you, Dr. Mittman. Would someone from the institution like to make an opening statement?
Yes, thank you. This is Dr. Ina Lisker. I'm the president and CEO, and I'm the owner of United Medical Institute. I want to thank the board for your consideration, and I want to thank Kevin and the staff for guiding us through the process and for your patience as we were awaiting some last-minute documents from both states, state of Arizona, state of California. So I am very grateful to be here. United Medical Institute, right now we have one campus in Sacramento, California. I took over United Medical Institute in January 2018 when I basically bought it from a family of the original founder who unfortunately had passed away about 8 months prior to that. We took over the school with 8 students, and the school offered one program, diagnostic medical sonography program. We now have 80 students. We modernized the curriculum. In 2020, in July 2020, we officially received an approval from California, from BPPE, for the program to be a formally distance, hybrid distance learning program. And in January of 2023, we received our initial accreditation with DEAC. And so being in, having a presence in Arizona has been on our mind for a few years. And I believe in the portal, in the Arizona board portal, I think we still have our old inquiry application, but the time was right after we received our accreditation, and we look forward to offer Arizona students an opportunity to train in diagnostic medical sonography, which is a fast-growing career nationwide and in Arizona. And I rechecked my facts. Apparently, the expectation that this particular, the need for this particular profession is expected to grow by almost 50% in Arizona. So we look forward to provide that training to Arizona students, and to, of course, provide Arizona with additional trained sonographers. Now, one of the, I guess, separating features of our program compared to other sonography programs and sonography schools is that our program incorporates a very strong career development component through our career capstone career portfolio development. And in addition to that, a very important component of our program is community service. And our students begin servicing the community or community service experience from the beginning of their training as sonographers through clinical training during the first 60 weeks of their program that we typically offer through partnership with either nonprofit free clinics, or we develop a certain sort of agreement with a typical, a normal clinic where the school subsidizes and supports 1 or 2 days of providing free diagnostic ultrasound procedures to the members of the community that are disadvantaged, that may not have means or insurance to go to more standard providers. So we truly look forward to starting our program in Arizona. The program is 60-70% remote. We do not do a standard online education, or our remote or online education is conducted primarily via remote but synchronous. So what we are doing right now, synchronous modality, and of course the laboratory that our students complete about 160 hours of laboratory training on site. And so for that, we already have a facility in Arizona. We share a facility with our partner, an ultrasound clinic, and we have an arrangement for the laboratory classes to be conducted when the clinic is not operational. And as we did in California, in fact, the school actually helped to set up a free nonprofit diagnostic ultrasound clinic that operates at the school's facility. In Arizona, we already have an agreement that the school will subsidize 1 or 2 days of operating at the clinic, providing free diagnostic ultrasound. And the school typically, what the school does, we volunteer, or we provide sort of, we compensate our faculty, our registered sonographer faculty, to provide those free services through our partner clinics. So That's all I have at this moment. I have with me my colleague, Edward Mostaghimi, who is a designated student services, student support services person at the Arizona location.
Thank you very much for that. You actually answered several of my questions. The biggest thing that I had a hard time understanding, because I thought I had it mastered, and then I am now thinking I might be wrong, I thought your program was in clock hours. Is your program not in clock hours?
So, Dr. Leck, it's in both. So we record clock hours, and we also record quarter credit hours. So we kind of, everywhere you should see both measures. And that's how we submitted it to DAC, and that's how it's approved in California. And this is what we will, I guess, maintain for now. Now, I also should mention, and I failed to do so, it's not part of this process yet. But any minute, I'm expecting to hear from DAC regarding approval for a bachelor degree program. We submitted application for associate and bachelor degree program in diagnostic medical sonography. So we are waiting for that approval, and then we, I guess, will have to go through some process again to be able to offer it in Arizona as well. So that will be in quarter credit hours.
Thank you, because that was what was baffling my brain. So, like on your staff chart, you know, it goes 20 weeks, 40 weeks. It goes back to 20 weeks and 40 weeks, and I can't tell. Is that, like, so how long is your program?
So the program approximately 80 to 82 weeks. The first 60 weeks is not negotiable, because this is the time that it takes for the students, according to our cycle, to complete all the coursework. What may vary is the remaining 540 clinical hours that the students can complete. So, and we allow them to complete maybe a minimum 20 hours a week, all the way to 40 hours a week. And so depending on how the rate of their completion, they may be done in 80 weeks, or it may take a little bit longer. So, but approximately 80 weeks. And, but the 60 weeks is didactic.
Okay. So that was my question, because I was trying to do this. So sometimes I see clock hours and sometimes I see credit hours, and I couldn't figure it out, because like on your SAP chart, you might want to, unless I'm missing something, you might want to take a look at it, because it repeats. It goes 2040 and then it goes 2040, but there's measures. There's an evaluation one, evaluation two, evaluation three, and evaluation four. So I'm not understanding how you go back to 20 weeks. It might be supposed to be 60 or 80. I'm guessing, but I got stuck.
Right. No, I totally understand. So we basically, based on DPP and DAC requirements for the longest period at which we can do evaluation, we establish the checkpoints at the sort of logical segments of our program. So the first 20 weeks is more of a foundational module of the program. So we first evaluation happens after 20 weeks of the program. And then 40 weeks of the program is the core sort of module of the program. So we kind of stretch it until they complete their core module. So that's 20 weeks, the first one, and then 40 weeks. And after that, we evaluate them 20 or 40 weeks, sort of a breakdown during their clinical externship. I believe that's what it is, unless it's cumulative.
Yeah, that's what okay, so now that might be, because I think, and I'm sending this, I'll send this to Keith so he can work with you on it. But if it goes 2040, I think you mean if you're adding 20 to the 40, 60, 80, because it almost looks like it goes back in time. And I think what you're saying is right. It's supposed to be an interval at an additional 20, but it's reflecting that you go backwards. And so that's helpful. But I'll send that to him. Thank you.
Okay. I will definitely take a look at it for sure, Dr. Leck, and I apologize if it's confusing. I'm pretty sure that the cumulative quarter or clock hours in SAP, those are cumulative, but maybe I misstated the weeks. Maybe instead of cumulative, I stated sort of those segments.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I'll send that off. That's fine. That just helps me because 102 quarter hours is over 60 semester credits, which to me would be like, what are they walking out with as far as the credential is concerned? And you answered that with the associate bachelor's because now that was what I was trying to get in my brain too. So that was very helpful. They can sit for the test a year later after they graduate, or if they have a bachelor's degree going in, they can sit for it early. Does that exam provide you information on your students just for you to be able to gauge how well your graduates do?
So we do not track their passing the exam simply because since we do not prepare them for the exam for the licensure, it's not required in California. It's not required in Arizona, but informal, and we do not report it, let's say, for BPP purposes either. We do not track it. It's not part of our objectives to prepare them for the exam. We prepare them for the job. But we track knowing that we know when they are applying for the exam because we provide the school, required school documentation. And then once in a while, I go to the ARDMS to check if they actually passed it. But we do not specifically track that metric.
And you're not required to by DEAC at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Okay, and then the only other thing I noticed, you obviously have all your California information in there as far as the Strife Fund is concerned, and I'm assuming all of that would be updated. So I think I saw, like, some Arizona stuff, but I don't think I saw what I would believe would be all of the Arizona stuff that you would have to add in later on, like the Strife Fund, like the complaint narrative, stuff like that. But that is the totality. I really just was trying to figure out the credits and the hours.
Yeah. I will take a look at the SAP. And Dr. Leck, we will review the final copy of the catalog, and we will make sure I work with our long-standing consultant who always reviews our documents for California and also for she assisted us a great deal with Arizona to make sure that we do have all the components. I do believe the complaint piece is there. I do believe that some of the financial or tuition refund statement is there, but I will check on STRF.
I could have missed it too, but I didn't see it, so maybe I missed it.
You know what? We will do the final check. Okay. Before we publish the catalog, yes.
Well, thank you very much. So then after that, I'd like to open it up to any board members with any questions.
I'll jump in for a sec. Ms. Lisker, first of all, I want to say I remember when I got on the call a few minutes before 10, you were the first person here. And so I think you've spent the longest time, except for Mr. LaMountain. And maybe some other staff members. So thank you for your patience. I just had a question. You know, when I was going through the financial statement, I only saw, you know, I saw references to what I assume are ultrasound machines, a GE Quasi and a GE Versana. But all together, you know, it looked like there's maybe $50,000 or $60,000 of machines. Given what I know about ultrasound machines, they usually cost around $30,000 a piece. I didn't see any leases either. And so, are there other, you know, how many ultrasound units do you have, and do you kind of vary them so that students can get develop expertise using different kinds of ultrasounds? Because of course, you know, wherever they end up getting employed, you know, they could, you know, they may already have an ultrasound, but it might not be one of the ones that you have.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Mittman. So I believe what's reflected in our financials, and I will have to ask my CFO, my acting CFO, but my understanding is that what's reflected in the financials are probably most recent purchases. We have total of 5 or 6 machines right now in California. About 3, I believe, we purchased or we leased within the last couple of years. And I think because those are active lease, maybe that's why, or in terms of depreciation or something like that, that's maybe why they're the only ones are reflected there. Now, the GE machines, the lease, they're brand new machines, but we have 3 or 4 machines that are a little bit older and massive. And so the students definitely receive training on all sorts of types of machines. But those, the number of machines that we currently have absolutely meets the needs of the number of the students who are at any given time are in the lab. Now in Arizona, we will be using some of the machines of the ultrasound clinic that has it. We will be leasing it from them for the duration of the laboratory. And of course, if necessary, you know, we will just purchase additional units. We do not anticipate huge enrollment in the first year of our operations in Arizona, although who knows. But I'm counting on if we get 10 in the first year, I will be happy. But I think we have plenty of actual units to provide hands-on training, and that's not counting the clinical training. In addition to that, I have to say as of 2023, we actually, now it's part of the program, we have subscription with Sonosim. So the students receive a simulation kit, and it's a simulation sort of system when they use the probe anywhere on the surface, but it feels like they're scanning a sort of a live patient, and it provides them with all the pathology cases and all.
So is that for when they're in hybrid mode?
They are using it. They have access to that from the very beginning of their program, but the assignments specifically from Sonosim simulations are part of their laboratory classes. But they are using that probe as a training, and there are also online sort of modules on theory and on pathology and anatomy in addition to our standard lectures. So they are using that simulation throughout the program, but the specific assignments from Sonosim simulation is included in every laboratory class depending on the topic.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. So this morning, either by coincidence or to prepare for this portion, I went to an ultrasound. I went and saw an ultrasound. So this is our granddaughter to be.
Oh, congratulations. Aww. Mazel tov.
Thank you. Mazel tov to you for, well, we have to vote.
Not yet, right.
If all goes well, we wish you well. Thanks for the congratulations there.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Dr. Leck, back to you.
Okay. Well, real quick, Dr. Mittman, is that your first?
Yes.
Oh, that's a big day. Also, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations. Do we know if it's a boy or a girl?
I don't know. You're the ultrasound
I'm not an ultrasound expert. I'm not a real doctor. I'm just a PhD.
We just play one on TV. We play one on Zoom.
Yeah, so she's okay. A girl. She's a girl.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, so if I may, Dr. Mittman, I would like to make a motion.
Dr. Leff?
Nope, I won't do it.
Dr. Bote has a question.
I'm so sorry, sir.
Oh, that's clear. I just a quick piece of clarification or information. Take it as you will. And going back to the question around certification and what the requirements are, and looking at your catalog around licensure and certification, I can see how the two paragraphs there might be confusing to students. There are statements that indicate you prepare for parts of the test or to sit for parts of the test and that you encourage them to take it, but the school is not responsible. I don't think there's anything here from a requirement standpoint, just an invitation to take a look at that for clarity from the lens of a student.
We will absolutely do that, yes. Thank you.
Okay, now I would like to, Kevin.
Yes.
Dr. Newman, I would like to make a motion to approve the regular degree granting license and maintain a $15,000 surety bond.
And I'll second.
Great. We have a motion and a second. Dr. Lisker, do you agree to the $15,000 bond?
Yes, and I believe we already provided it, right?
Okay. Yes, you have. Yes, you have. All right. Dr. Mittman.
Aye.
Dr. Mittman votes aye. Dr. Leck?
Aye.
Dr. Leck votes aye. Mr. Wallace?
Aye.
Mr. Wallace votes aye. Mr. Ball?
Aye.
Mr. Ball votes aye. Ms. Kelly?
Aye.
Ms. Kelly votes aye. Dr. Boutte?
Aye.
Dr. Boutte votes aye. By your vote of six ayes, no nays, that motion passes.
All right.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you all very much.
Mazel tov to you, and we'll move on. Okay, we have a call to the public. And let's see, public interest, well, I don't have to read this. Call to the public. We usually look forward to someone like Susan Cardullo. I don't know if, Susan, are you here representing the association?
Yes, it's Susan Cardullo from the Arizona Private School Association. I'm so happy to be talking to you. And I apologize I lost my video part due to some poor scheduling on my part. But I just wanted to congratulate all the applicants today. It was an excellent meeting, well run by staff and the board. And great first time for Mary and Brett.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. And I was joking about a 1 o'clock tea time, but I could have almost made it. I actually don't play golf, but I couldn't think of a better kind of excuse like that. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, and thanks to the board because this was a massive agenda, and so I know that I meant the staff. Well, and actually the board too. This was a massive agenda, and so to get through this. Number of schools plus all of the work on the sunset review and the budget and the strife fund. It's a lot. So thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful day. See you next. We'll see each other in October. And I guess, Kevin, does that mean we have a finance and complaint committees in September?
In September, we do.
Okie doke. Well, there we have it. And so with that, this meeting is adjourned.
Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Bye. Bye.
Bye.